using free speech to free minds. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
It's Wednesday, the 25th of August, year of our Lord, 2021, day 529 of America Held Hostage. Today we're going to have a very interesting interview, I think. We're going to have a doctor, McDonald, who has testified with Ron DeSantis, Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida, about not only the biological and physiological detrimental effects of masks, but also the psychological effects of masks on children. And we're also going to talk about a vaccine for the vaccine adverse effects. There is no end to this. These people are smelling money everywhere, and they're not going to stop with this. We'll be right back. Yeah, we're going to have some tips for people who are being kicked out of their jobs, because I've gotten so many emails from people in all types of work, not just the military, but all types of work, where people are telling me that they have gotten notification from their employer that they're going to be fired in a couple of months if they don't get a vaccine. And we've got also, as I point out yesterday, we had an individual who showed a card and said, card says that it's got multiple slots for vaccines. And so I received something this morning from the EU, a listener there, who said, take a look at this one. It's got 8 different slots for vaccines on my vaccine card. This is not about to end. They're talking about doing custom vaccines for any imagined variant, as I said yesterday. And I invite doctors and biologists to check me on this. But we have 2 major variants of smallpox. Yeah, there's that card. We'll show that coming up in a moment here as well. There's 2 major variants of smallpox. And then there's a lot of other animal variants of that. And when you get the smallpox vaccine, it takes care of all those. And they're more than just variants. They're a lot more different than just a variant. This is absolute nonsense. They're not testing for the Delta variant or any of these other things. I gave you the information a couple of days ago. I'm going to get that article and do that again. This needs to be done on a regular basis. I know that people don't listen to every show every day, and they don't listen to every part of every show every day. I did cut that out as a video, but we've got to emphasize the fact that this National Association of Public Health Laboratories that do the tests admit that there are no tests for the Delta variants, and they're not running these tests for the ones that they do have because they don't have the time and so forth. So this is, again, going back to what we saw, as I said yesterday, it's deja flu. We saw this for years with the flu shots. Don't send this stuff in. We don't have the time to test these things and determine if this is this year's flu or not, because every year they would just imagine what they thought the flu was going to be. They didn't know. They had to prepare these things months in advance. So it's like, well, let's see, What strain of flu will we vaccinate people for this year? I don't know. Pick one. You know, here's a deck of cards. Pick one. All right, we'll do that one this year. They don't know what it's going to be. And when people get sick, as they always do every year during the winter with flu, they would say, well, don't send it to us. We don't want to know if it's a swine flu or if it's SARS or whatever it is. We don't have the time to do all these tests to distinguish whether it is. Just, if you think it's that, tell us, and we'll put it on the test case there. And we'll use that to pressure people to get the flu. They did the same thing with COVID. And they're doing the same thing with these so-called variants. But before we get into that, let's get into a little bit of headline news. As I pointed out yesterday, Michael Hayden, who is out there saying, yeah, this is our Taliban here in America on social media, and saying maybe we should put these, send these unvaccinated people to Afghanistan. Well, you know, we've had in Afghanistan, we had the CIA, the current CIA director, who met personally with the Taliban. And then immediately after that, we hear that they've blocked the roads. People are furious with the CIA, furious with the Pentagon, the Pentagram, as we should call them. So whether, if you assume that the CIA is on our side, I don't assume that. If you assume the CIA is on our side, then it was a total failure. But let me tell you, when you see Michael Hayden bragging about, this is our Taliban. No, no, no. His Taliban is the one on the top of the picture that has the terrorists in Afghanistan. That's their Taliban. They own it. It's their Taliban. It's their Al-Qaeda. It's their Mujahideen. They are the terrorists. They're the ones who are arming and equipping ISIS. They're the ones who are destroying buildings on 9/11. It's the CIA. They're our Taliban. They're our terrorists. They are terrorists. When you look at all this stuff, I mean, you know, we had the clips. I played the clips, and it still cracks me up to see those dancing jihadis. that move they got, the AK-47. But the, especially when I put it to the other music. But you know what? These guys, those are a PR thing. And they're murdering people left and right. They just shot a Reuters photographer who was left behind, couldn't get out. He was executed. So Reuters is upset, rightfully, about that. But, you know, he gets publicity because he's a Reuters photographer. I saw a short clip. It was actually on the Daily Mail. I didn't pull it in. But there was a comedian, an Afghan comedian. Yes, there is such a thing. There's an Afghan comedian. He did jokes about all kinds of things, including the Taliban. And they showed him in a car. He had a guy sitting on one side of him, another guy on the other side of him, and he's in the middle seat, in the back seat. And it was just before they took him out and killed him. And even as he's there and some people are photographing him, he's cracking jokes about the Taliban on either side. And the one guy that's closest to the camera turned around and just slapped him really hard. Yeah, you could hear it. And, slapped him. He did another joke and he slapped him again. Then they took him out and they shot him multiple times, tied him up to a tree, shot him multiple times, and slit his throat. Now, when you see that happening, when you see what these people do, when you know that the CIA is arming and equipping these people, whether you want to call them the Mujahideen or the Al-Qaeda, or you want to call them ISIS, or you want to call them Taliban, what, these are the people that our Taliban, our CIA, our NSA have been equipping for the longest time. And so when you see somebody like Michael Hayden pointing to us, because we've got pickup truck caravan that's got American flags and Trump flags and so forth, conservative people, saying that, these are our enemies. We need to send them to Afghanistan. We need to punish them. They're doing exactly the same sort of thing, and they're going to literally execute people. It won't be that long. They're just building up to it now. They're nudging us towards that society. They've encouraged the mass mob of America to want to kick anybody out of society that they disagree with. And, of course, the next step is executions. And what Michael Hayden wants to do is exactly what those two thugs did, those two mafia-like thugs. I mean, it was like a mafia hit thing, you know. Oh, come on, Tony wants to take you for a ride here. You know, Tony Fauci wants to talk to you here. Hop in the back seat. I don't like what you have to say about this thing here, so we're going to slit your throat. That's what Michael Hayden and his ilk want to do. And by the way, you know, I mentioned the fact yesterday that all these people are saying, wait a minute, you know, this is a guy who was a four-star general. This is a guy who's been head of the CIA, who's been head of the NSA, who is now a talking head on CNN and a lot of other places. This is really bad. It's like, well, it's only, is this news to the news organizations where these people are coming from? And, of course, Michael Hayden is also on the board of NewsGuard. I didn't realize he was on the board of NewsGuard. NewsGuard is the one of the organizations that's going to protect truthiness in America. They're going to guard the news. It's coming from Microsoft, but it's coming with money from DARPA and the intelligence agencies. And they also, Microsoft also has Election Guard. It's software that has been produced by a subsidiary of theirs, wholly owned subsidiary of theirs, and the only funding that that subsidiary has gotten is $10 million grant from DARPA. So NewsGuard and Election Guard, to control what you hear and to be able to rig the votes electronically, this is all coming from DARPA. This is why I say when you focus on Smartmatic or Dominion, you're way off base. Mike Lindell and these other people, he's being pwned by one branch of the CIA or with another branch of the CIA. They have no idea what's going on. What's going on is that you've got the intelligence agencies that are controlling what you hear. They're rigging the votes. They're selecting the candidates on both sides. And this preening little fat baby. Whenever I look at Michael Hayden, pull up the picture, Travis, of Brazil, where you have the baby mask that's worn by Michael Palin as he's torturing Jonathan Pryce, the protagonist in it. Whenever I see Michael Hayden, he looks exactly to me like the character that was the Inquisitor torturing people. And he would put on this baby mask to torture people. And that right there, that's Michael Hayden right there, right there. That's our future right there. Anybody that disagrees with the regime, bound and gagged and then tortured by some baby-faced, sick individual like Michael Hayden, one of the most powerful men in the U.S. security state, perhaps the most powerful, as Breitbart points out. It's actually Alon Bakari, who was a very good writer at Breitbart. Excellent. He's always been on point. He said Hayden also sits on the board of NewsGuard, the establishment media project that purports to rank news sites by their trustworthiness, and is singled out. Breitbart is saying it's not trustworthy. So they give that information out and they block them on search engines and so forth. But it's not the establishment media that is doing this. Alam is wrong about that. It is DARPA. And, of course, their corporate shill, Microsoft. NewsGuard previously partnered with Microsoft to roll out a browser extension that puts warning notes next to allegedly untrustworthy news sites. NewsGuard continues to falsely claim that Breitbart fails to adhere to basic journalistic standards. Those journalistic standards would be, thou shalt not say anything negative about the establishment or their agenda. Educators in Missouri have sued the district for CRT training. Part of the CRT training was to tell them that they should go out and vote for socialists. And this was given to every employee of the school system, from bus drivers, as they point out, all the way up to AP history teachers. Let me tell you what CRT really is. It's communist revolution training. They want a communist revolution. They want to do it on the basis of race war, not class war. See, history repeats itself. It just rhymes. It doesn't repeat itself exactly. It just rhymes. So instead of a class warfare that they were able to do in Europe, here they will do it with race war. The training told educators to commit to equity and to become anti-racist educators. It's not enough to be non-racist. You've got to be anti-racist, which means that you've got to actually go out there and actively hunt down any signs of whiteness anywhere. So you actually have to be racist. Anti-racist is not being against racism. Anti-racist is racism against whites. That's what they mean by that. In the same way that Antifa is not actually anti-fascist. They're very fascist and their tactics. You can't tell the difference between communists and fascists. But they point out that this is this lawsuit being done by the Southeastern Legal Foundation said it is a First Amendment case because the required training was for all school district employees and they were discriminated based on viewpoint, causing them to self-censor their true beliefs and, quote, forcing them to accept beliefs that they simply don't agree with. Let me say that this is the perfect explanation of what government school experience was for me. I was, it was required. Attendance was required. Homeschooling was not an option. I was discriminated against based on my viewpoint. I had to self-censor my beliefs, except I didn't. And they tried to force me to accept beliefs that I didn't accept. I didn't like it at the time. I guess what it did was it helped to train me. they hardened me, and I was hardened by junior high school and high school training. It made me what I am today. So I would like to thank all of those teachers who tried to ram their agenda down my throat. so, you know, God works in a mysterious way. Babylon B, CEO. This is not satire, unfortunately. This is an actual news article. Babylon B, CEO, says that Facebook is determined to suppress their organization. They keep calling it a news organization. And I understand. Look, partly I can understand. It is hard to tell satire from reality today, isn't it? But they know the difference. And they know the reason that they're censoring them. And Seth Dillon, who's the CEO of Babylon Bee, did not say this, but this is the reality. The reality is that Facebook is fully aware of Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals. He said that ridicule is the most powerful weapon. There is no answer to it. And so they would never label as fake news The Onion or Saturday Night Live, but we've seen how effective their political satire can be. And now you have all the late-night talk shows, especially people like Stephen Colbert. They've just become political hacks for the other side. And they do not label Stephen Colbert as fake news, do they? And yet he is. This is an article by MRC TV. Seth Dillon said, Facebook has used biased fact-checkers to flag content that leans conservative, especially satire that makes fun of prominent Democrats like Biden and Pelosi. He said it becomes an issue when this results in politically motivated viewpoint discrimination that is done under the guise of cracking down on misinformation and hate speech. He said Facebook seems to be classifying the publication's content as news instead of satire. And so he said he contacted them months ago and asked them, quote, are you giving our satire site a poor news quality rating and suppressing our content on that basis? He said they only responded months later, and they said, quote, unfortunately, when it comes to news quality score, we are unable to disclose who is or isn't included, as this is an internal metric. So then he doubled down. He said, you can't answer with a yes or no whether or not Facebook treats satire as if it were news? I think maybe they just did. Since it's called a news quality score, one would assume that it applies to news only. Satire is not news. Does Facebook acknowledge that satire is not news? No, they do not. They do. They said, when they got back, they said, we define news broadly, but essentially we look to capture anything that can be perceived as news or influences the news ecosystem. Anything that influences people. And of course, satire is a very powerful weapon to influence people. Lead Stories, a liberal fact-checker site, recently labeled a satire article from the Babylon Bee as false. The article mockingly accused CNN of praising the Taliban for wearing masks during the Afghanistan takeover. The fact check said that this is false information, and independent fact checkers say the information has no basis in fact. Well, I don't know. You did have a CNN reporter who said, even though they're shouting "Death to America," they seem to be kind of nice. You know, they're out there riding bumper cars and going around the merry-go-round, and they're dancing to "Sam the Sham and the Pharaohs." Again, except that was my soundtrack. And then, if we want to know where all this is headed, where is all of this communist, Soviet-style, Stalinesque censorship and this communist revolution training, CRT, where is all this stuff headed? I think you'll find the answer in a clemency that was granted by Cuomo to a Weather Underground murder convict before leaving office. In my mind, this kind of ties things together. It also shows the Democrat family tree. The Democrat family tree is one of a Marxist mafia. Because this individual who was, first of all, we'll talk about the individual, and then we'll talk about the connections within the Democrat Party and how they flow into the educational establishment. Murder convict David Gilbert, a former member of the Weather Underground terrorist group. Gilbert, 76, a man convicted of 3 counts of second-degree murder in 1983, 4 counts of first-degree robbery, a 1981 truck robbery that led to the deaths of 2 police officers and a security guard. So he was serving a 75 years to life sentence for his role in the $1.6 million theft. So Cuomo pardoned that guy. He pardoned that guy. And he said the march towards a more fair, more just, more equitable, more empathetic New York State is a long one, but every step forward we can take is worthwhile and important. These clemencies make clear the power of redemption. What has this guy done to redeem himself from 3 counts of second-degree murder, a robbery of $1.6 million? What has he done to redeem himself? When he was convicted, this is what he said at his sentencing hearing. He said, "The rulers, the rich, and their armed mercenaries are the only lives that are valued by this court. We say that if they sentence us to 1,000 years, or if they shoot us at dawn tomorrow, it will not save this social system." Unfortunately, they didn't shoot him at dawn the next day. They incarcerated him because it's New York, to wait until the right Democrats came along, that Democrat being Cuomo. Cuomo said he had redeemed himself. Here's what Cuomo said, this murdering robber, this revolutionary, because that's the other thing about this. It's not just the robbery and the murders were just to fund his Marxist revolution. So what did he do to redeem himself? Cuomo said that Gilbert has made, quote, significant contributions to AIDS education, and he's also worked as a student tutor and law library clerk. Well, there you go. He's completely redeemed, right? And I'm sure that the families of those people, possibly they've now passed on as well, feel satisfied that he has paid enough for this, don't you think? But here's where the connection gets more interesting. Gilbert and actually his wife also, I think, was also sentenced. But Gilbert is the father of Chesa Boudin, who is the George Soros installed. It was Soros money that got him elected. But he is the district attorney in San Francisco, where he has been letting dangerous criminals go left and right, where you have seen the pictures of people going in and stealing up to $1,000 at a time, and no prosecutions for any of that. He has basically presided over allowing a crime spree like his parents did. Now, Chesa Boudin was raised after his parents went to jail for these crimes I just described. Chesa was raised by Bill Ayers. and his wife, and who were the founders of the Weather Underground. So this guy is very radical. Actually, there was just this month, earlier this month, before this pardon happened, there was an article on Heritage.org, a conservative think tank, and they were going through and looking at, it was a series of articles of 20 or so what they call rogue prosecutors, and that's a good way to describe these guys. They were put into office by millions of dollars given by Soros, Kerry Tuna, and their affiliated money launderers. They're NGOs. So we had a situation in San Antonio where there was a district attorney there, and they had targeted him to be replaced by one of their surrogates. And he went public, and he basically turned the election into the fact that it was George Soros that was trying to get him out, and he won that election because he made it about George Soros. But in most of these elections, Soros has gotten the guy that he is giving millions of dollars to for these local district attorneys. And if you recall, back in the fall of, after the election of 2016, I reported how outgoing President Obama and outgoing DOJ head Eric Holder were meeting together to talk about how their next focus was going to be on electing radical local district attorneys and state attorneys general throughout the country. And it was Soros who was providing that. And that has been their focus. And one of the reasons they were doing that was to lay the foundation for these non-prosecutions of Antifa and BLM that you see happening everywhere. But also to unleash havoc in the cities, which is what Chesa Boudin has been doing. If I'm pronouncing his last name correctly, I'm not sure. Nevertheless, this is the article from Heritage.org. In November 2019, after winning his race to serve as District Attorney of San Francisco, Chesa said, "The people of San Francisco have sent a powerful and clear message. It's time for a radical change to how we envision justice." He, like fellow Soros-backed rogue prosecutor George Gascon, the L.A. District Attorney, is now facing a recall petition, and for good reason. Boudin, 40, is one of several dozen, rogue prosecutors elected to public office, thanks in part to Soros or his political action committees or his wealthy liberal friends. Their goal, as we have written in a major research paper on the rogue prosecutor movement, is to fundamentally reverse engineer the criminal justice system by replacing independent law and order prosecutors, both Democrat and Republican, with pro-criminal, anti-victim zealots who flout the rule of law, abuse their office, and as a result see crime explode in their cities. But what they don't mention here in the Heritage Foundation is, and it's a key part, they don't stress the fact that they're getting rid of independent-minded Democrat and Republican prosecutors because they want to have somebody who's going to follow their agenda, their Marxist agenda, to cover for what we are looking at in terms of Antifa and BLM riots and things of that sort. Unlike other rogue prosecutors, Boudin never served as a prosecutor before he was elected. Here's his background. To say they didn't have the background of a typical prosecutor would be an understatement. In 1981, when he was a baby, his parents, Kathy Boudin and David Gilbert, both members of the Weather Underground, a radical militant Marxist organization, drove the getaway car following an armed robbery of a Brinks truck in New York, in which a Brinks guard and two police officers were fatally shot. As a result, this guy was raised by Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn, the co-founders of the Weather Underground. Let me just insert here my comments that the Weather Underground has been at the forefront of white privilege from the very beginning. It was Bill Ayers who understood two fundamental things. He understood that as a Marxist revolutionary with the Weather Underground, he understood that they were not going to have success, and they had consistently failed in America by trying to use class warfare. So they needed to use race warfare. They took the term white skin privilege that had been coined by someone else, and they popularized it. And then after he had a close call with going to jail, but he had friends in high places. His father is very, very wealthy, Bill Ayers. So they got out of their murder charges under technicality. They were bombing buildings and some people got killed. And they were able to get out on a technicality with friends in high places. And he stopped bombing buildings and he went into education with his white privilege stuff. This is why I say CRT is communist revolutionary training. So it was Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn. And again, they went to Chicago. They're all part of that clique where Barack Obama is. See how it all folds back together in this Democrat family tree of Marxist mafia? A very close friend of Barack Obama there in Chicago, pushing the rewriting of our educational standards. And of course, we have centralized a lot of the educational curriculum and approaches and attitudes with the Department of Education, and they want to have centralized control of all these formerly independent prosecutors at the state and local levels. So Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn raised Chezza Boudin. Before attending law school, Boudin, as a Marxist, you know, to train this guy properly, they sent him to live in Venezuela, and he served as a translator to Hugo Chavez. In 2019, flush with Soros campaign money and feel-good talking points, writes the Heritage Foundation, Boudin ran for district attorney, promising to end mass incarceration, to end cash bail, to establish a unit to review alleged wrongful convictions. So how did that work out? Well, we know that he's essentially ended private property. You have stores closing left and right because they can't handle the shoplifting stuff. But beyond that, you have property offenses, say the police department. Vehicle break-ins, for example, are up between 100%, doubling, and between 750% in parts of the city. In May alone, the number of reported vehicle thefts, 1,891 cars stolen. It was more than double what it was the previous year in May 2020. Since taking office, he has also been criticized for releasing suspects with long criminal records who have gone on, surprise, surprise, to commit other crimes. Here's a couple of them. Jeffrey Lyons had a record dating back to 2007, including charges of attempted robbery, burglary, evading police, driving a stolen vehicle, weapons charges, shoplifting, well, that's not a problem, eh? Trespassing, and drug charges. Last December, Lyons was driving a stolen car. He was observed running a red light, making an illegal U-turn, driving over a traffic median, and weaving between two lanes. He was, at the time, on supervised release for theft. He was arrested for driving a stolen car without a license and on a suspicion of driving while under the influence of drugs and alcohol. Chezza Boudin's office there, the district attorney, insisted on getting back positive lab results before charging Lyons, and they released him by the time those lab results were returned. Now, whether or not he was under the influence, he was driving a stolen car. Not a problem. On January the 22nd, an intoxicated Lyons, driving, again, a stolen vehicle, this time a truck, ran a red light and plowed into eight cars, killing a 26-year-old woman and severely injuring three others. This guy just keeps stealing cars while drunk. Then there was Troy McAllister. Until April 2020, McAllister had previously been convicted of robbery and carjacking, was in jail awaiting trial on another robbery charge, which would have made him eligible for a life sentence under California's three strikes. So, he had done robbery and carjacking and been convicted of those, and then he was waiting for another robbery charge, and that would have given him a life sentence. After Boudin, who was at one time had represented McAllister as a lawyer, so he'd been a defense attorney for this guy who had been convicted of robbery and carjacking. I wonder if he was defending him when he got those convictions or if those were other things that he had done. Anyway, he issued a policy memorandum directing his prosecutors not to pursue these three strikes cases. McAllister entered into a plea agreement, was given credit for time served while awaiting trial, and was immediately released. Following his release, McAllister was arrested several times on drug and theft charges over the ensuing months, but no charges were filed by Budin's office. Then on New Year's Eve, while fleeing the scene of a burglary, while driving a car that he had stolen 2 days beforehand and carrying a stolen gun, he struck and killed a 27-year-old man and a 60-year-old woman. Now, I mention all this because you need to understand how this Democrat Marxist mafia is connected. Cuomo releases the father of this guy who was raised by the Weather Underground founders, who themselves should have been in jail for life for what they had done. But instead, they began this white skin privilege and so-called CRT teaching that is going around. And friends of Barack Obama, Barack Obama and Eric Holder, working with Soros to make sure they get prosecutors put in place. So they take the son that they had raised, who they then sent to be to work for Hugo Chavez in Venezuela, socialist communist as a translator. And now Cuomo has pardoned his father, as he is pardoning everyone else, as they are pushing this Marxist revolution everywhere. Now, Larry Elder, this is all, he's a prosecutor in California, in San Francisco. The former mayor of San Francisco, Gavin Newsom, is up for recall. And Larry Elder, running against him, a conservative commentator, was interviewed by Reason Magazine. And they took him to task for attacking this San Francisco district attorney who was allowing people to just go in unmolested and take $1,000 of stuff at a time. And you've got even big box retailers cannot stay in business with that. And they're shutting stores in his jurisdiction. And they said, "You said that this guy was funded by Soros." "Well, yes, he is." And Reason said, "That's absolutely false." "Well, it's not." And so you see how it's all connected, even to Gavin Newsom. And they will attack anybody who pushes back against that. By the way, Gavin Newsom is now concerned about Larry Elder. And he's getting lots of money from the Hollywood elite, reports Breitbart. Spielberg, Barbara Streisand, Streisand effect there, giving him lots of money. Spielberg recently gave $25,000 to stop the Republican recall of Governor Newsom committee. His former DreamWorks partner, Jeffrey Katzenberg, who also was at Disney or Touchstone, which was a subsidiary of Disney at the time, I think. So Katzenberg gave $500,000. Rob Reiner, Meathead, gave $10,000 to support Gavin Newsom. Barbara Streisand, $2,500. You know, Dinesh D'Souza went to jail for giving $25,000 donation, I think it was, directly to a candidate instead of doing it through a PAC. He didn't realize that that was all set up to entrap people. Casey Wasserman, who helped organize the event, donated $100,000. The largest donation came from Netflix's CEO, who gave $3 million to keep Newsom in place. What they're doing is they have nationalized this election. Gavin Newsom is so incompetent, so inexcusable in what he has done, that their strategy is twofold. Number one, they want to try to tie Larry Elder to Trump. Number two, they're telling everybody that if you think that Joe Biden is bad, you don't know how bad a shape Dianne Feinstein is in. Democrats are wringing their hands about this and saying she needs to step down. But, of course, no Democrat is ever going to release the ring of power until you carry them out feet first. We saw that with Ginsburg and many others. So Dianne Feinstein is in very, very poor health. Not just mentally, she's gone, totally gone, but physically she's in poor health. If she were to die, and if you had a Republican who was governor, such as Larry Elder, then he would be able to appoint her successor. And that would change the balance of power in the Senate. So they've nationalized the election based upon that. And they're trying to tar and feather him with association to Donald Trump, which apparently, unfortunately, he did support and had kind words to say. But in spite of that, I think anybody would be a big improvement over Gavin Newsom for sure. So you see other people, I laugh when I see this being reported, even by Breitbart News. They call Susan Pritzker, who is part of the Pritzker family, Governor Pritzker, the radical Democrat governor in Illinois, who has been locking people down left and right. They identify Susan Pritzker as a philanthropist. Let me tell you, she is a Hyatt heir, just like Pritzker, Governor Pritzker is. They're heirs to the Hyatt fortune and many other things. When you are a trust fund baby and you get the money that previous generations have obtained, let's just say that. I won't even say earned. And then you start giving away to radical liberal causes. Then you're a philanthropist. You're not a trust fund baby or a spoiled brat heir. Also, along the same lines, you see the wife of Mark Zuckerberg. You see the wife of Steve Jobs giving six figures or more to Gavin Newsom to keep him in office. And as we look at the upcoming election there, we had an interesting thing show up. CBS LA reports that police found more than 300 stolen ballots for this recall election in the vehicle of a suspect. They have no idea at the time. They said, we don't know why he had this. You know, maybe it's some of the money that they were able to use from these wealthy Democrats. I don't know. Maybe that's why. And so they didn't go into the details of it. They said, the people whose ballots were stolen will be receiving a new ballot. It's considered to be an isolated incident. See, nothing to see. Just move on, says CBS News. PJ Media has a different approach to it. As they begin their article, they say, first of all, as a public service announcement, there is no such thing as voter fraud in U.S. elections, and thank you for your attention. And then they talk about this particular case. He was discovered asleep in his car in the parking lot of a 7-Eleven. And when he, maybe the people at 7-Eleven called because he'd been there for a while or whatever, but the police found drugs, cash, several driver's licenses, 300 unopened recall election ballots in the car. How did he obtain these? Nothing to worry about. It will just be fine. Having the ballots and several driver's licenses clearly establishes the intent to commit voter fraud, says PJ Media. But they also found a loaded firearm, meth, thousands of pieces of mail, a scale, multiple California driver's licenses, and credit cards in other individuals' names. But there's nothing to worry about, and there's nothing to indicate that this was had anything to do with the election, says the L.A. County Registrar. See points here. Cue the laugh track. Yeah, exactly. In the U.K., they have started putting all kinds of wrap on police cars. See if you can find a picture of this, Travis. It's the dailyskeptic.org. Isn't it time the woke boys in blue started policing our streets and not our tweets? That's the article. And this is not satire. This is not satire. When you look at these cars, they're covered with all kinds of rainbow stuff and pride. It must be absolutely humiliating for a police officer to have to ride in one of these things. So these, they're calling them hate crime cars, splashed and blazoned with the word pride everywhere. It's the woke British police. Are the police really devoting resources to spray painting their vehicles with rainbows when only 7% of violent crimes end up being prosecuted? Said the Mail. It isn't just stabbing that goes unpunished. The writer says, I was burgled last week and thieves made off with my teenage daughter's laptop, including her A-level photography work. There it is. Look at that. Police didn't turn up until the following day, mercifully not in a unicorn car, at which point they told us nothing could be done. However, we did get a nice email from them with our crime reference number and an assurance that the Metropolitan Police stand against any form of discrimination. Does that mean they're not going to discriminate against these people by arresting them? What the police mean by hate crime is not the type of thing that we saw on a suspected assault on a Jewish man in Stanford Hill last week, in which The 64-year-old victim was left unconscious. The perp is still at large, despite a community group linking him to a separate incident in which a Jewish child was allegedly also assaulted. Only a tiny fraction of reported hate crimes end up being prosecuted, because most of them are not crimes at all. These are things that are reported to the police, that somebody doesn't like what you said on social media. However, even though the police do not prosecute those, they put it on a file and save it. So as these people point out, if at some point in the future you decide that you want to go for a job that would require an enhanced background check, these types of things will show up on your criminal record. They point out investigating offensive social media and punishing people for thinking wrong thoughts, even though no law has been broken. It's not so much the Keystone Cops and clown cars as it is the Stasi disguised as characters from a children's TV show. Here in the U.S., Biden's quote-unquote American Families Plan could actually destroy the family farm. And that is by design. What they're doing is they're bringing back the death tax. And they're saying, don't worry, we're going to protect you for the first $1 million of taxes on property. And that sounds like a lot. But the reality is that it will force the sale of virtually every farm. As the Iowa Farm Bureau points out, the average farm is a little over 300 acres. And if you multiply that out, so it's about the average family farm in Iowa is 359 acres. And at an average of $7,500 per acre. And that's not a lot. It's just that they have a lot of land. That would leave the couple that died with a $1.7 million exposure to taxes. Now, the first $1 million would be free, but then you get a 40% tax on anything above that, a 40% tax. And so they're at the mercy of inflation. They say they're going to index this to inflation beginning a year after they pass it. But how do they calculate inflation? And if you have somebody who has moved into an area, and maybe you've got an area that was rural, but now you've got somebody who's put in a multi-family development, all of a sudden they're going to reassess your property and it's going to go up in value. Farmers are cash poor. They don't have the money to pay for, in this particular case, the average Iowa farm, the parents die, 359 acres at $7,500 per acre, $1.7 million rather exposed to taxes, not $1.7 million total. So after you take away the $1 million exemption, they still have $1.7 million that is taxed at 40%. That's $680,000. Just write a check. We've got that in the account, right? No, these people don't have that kind of cash. And it's that way with a lot of different businesses. When you have, and that's the real problem with these death taxes. I mean, people have paid taxes all their life on everything that they've accumulated. They've been able to accumulate this, and then they use the death tax to prevent this being passed on, unless you're somebody like the Pritzker family or Steve Jobs' family. What rich people do, what you may want to consider doing, if you have assets, is to set it up into a trust fund and to name the kids as trustees. That can protect it for a couple of generations to do that. That's the dodge that the wealthy use when they want to pass this stuff on. But if you don't think about that up front, it's kind of like, you know, these people, they can donate $3 million to Gavin Newsom. But if Dinesh D'Souza donates $25,000 to a friend of his from college who's running for office, he goes to jail because they do it through a political action committee. And if you don't put your property into a trust, they will confiscate it. It's the kind of games that they play. So, yeah, the land swap tax would dry up farmland, create barriers to entry for new or beginning farmers so that people like Bill Gates and the Chinese general can buy up all the farmland property, and then shut it down in the name of the environment and tell you that you've got to now buy your meat from Bill Gates, who's making it in a laboratory, because, you know, real meat is going to destroy the environment. See how this works? You get the government to outlaw your competition and force people to buy your product. It's the pharmaceutical model. Jonathan Turley points out the Second Amendment is about rifles and not racism. Well, it's also about pistols as well. But it is the left now has lost the argument. As he points out, for decades, they made the argument that the Second Amendment was not about an individual right. It was about a collective right, and that the collective right was the right of the National Guard. Well, first of all, the National Guard was not the militia. You didn't have the National Guard created until the early 20th century, and the militia was every able-bodied person from 16 to 60, essentially. The yeomanry. It was a tradition that had begun, very well understood, in Britain. You had the yeomanry there that would practice, as I've mentioned before, they were required to practice longbow. One day a week, Sundays, you know, their day off or whatever, they would, afternoons, they were required to practice that. And as I mentioned before, when we took the kids to England about 20 years ago, and we went to Warwick Castle, there was a historical reenactor there, and he was showing people the longbow and talking about that whole thing. And he said, you know, we'd pull up the skeletons of these guys, the yeomanry, said, you can see a difference in their left arm where they're holding that bow out there. And so in that tradition of the militia and the yeomanry, they had, that's what the Second Amendment was about. It was not about the National Guard. But they tried to collectivize that. If you look at this, if you look at the Bill of Rights, except for the Ninth and Tenth Amendment, all of them are about individual rights, about due process, protection against excessive punishment, so forth, protection of your speech. None of this stuff is collective. These people take away your fundamental God-given rights by pretending that you as an individual don't have anything, that everything belongs to the collective. It is a communist, collectivist approach. And that's what they're doing with everything, including our informed consent about these vaccines. And so Jonathan Turley says, since they lost that decisively, that argument was shut down by the Supreme Court in 2008, they said it was an end of it, part of the case with Heller in Washington, D.C. We had an off-duty cop not allowed to carry a gun in Washington, D.C. He took him to court, and they said, yeah, that is a individual right. So now that they're on shaky footing with that, they've decided to reinvent this, as Jonathan Turley points out, by calling it racist. Because if you call anything racist, it's no longer subject to debate. That just stops it right there. You pull the racist card out, you accuse somebody of that, and now they have to be quiet. He said issues that have long been debated on other grounds, such as the Senate's filibuster rule, or voter ID laws, or even standardized testing, and math, statistics, or meritocracy, all of these have been reframed as a choice between racism and equality. Except he got that wrong. It's equity. Equity. They don't want equality. Equality would be what you would have with meritocracy. They want equity, which means equal results, which means that they will determine who gets what. So he said, you've got the American Civil Liberties Union now trying to push this. You've had some people who have written about this. Carol Anderson, I've talked about this, a chair at Emory University's Black Studies Department, claiming the Second Amendment was designed to keep African Americans powerless and vulnerable. No, it's exactly the opposite. Gun control was designed to keep African Americans powerless and vulnerable. Gun control, not the Second Amendment. Gun control was designed to do that. And people have long understood that. Frederick Douglass understood that. He wrote an editorial talking about the power of, quote, a good revolver and a steady hand. Ida B. Wells, one of the most prominent anti-lynching activists, declared, quote, the Winchester rifle deserves a place of honor in every black home if you want to protect yourself from the mob. And the same thing is true if you want to protect yourself from an Antifa BLM mob today. So, but this is where they're headed with their communist revolution training. And also another Second Amendment news, a company that is called Rare Breed Triggers. I've not talked about this before, although I've seen it. Lawrence DeMonaco has been served notice by the ATF and the Department of Justice saying that they have modified the semi-automatic trigger that can be dropped into an AR-15. And And what it is, and I've seen the demonstration of it, they call it the FRT-15 trigger. The government has classified it as a machine gun. And they're using the Trump precedent, a precedent Trump, his bump stock regulation, to do this. I said that it was going to be a very disturbing precedent. Not only the fact that they were banning something that was not a machine gun. I mean, with the bump stock, you still had to press the trigger each time. Well, it was is essentially doing the same thing that you could do if you hook it up to your belt. And that is the recoil pushes it back and then takes the thing forward, and you keep pressure on the trigger, and it pulls the trigger a second time with it bumping back and forth to give you a rapid rate of fire. This trigger does the same thing. The trigger has an internal mechanism that after you fire the shot, it's slightly different from a typical trigger in that it pushes the trigger forward. Now, if you keep constant pressure on it, you can get a very, very rapid rate of fire. But you still have to push the trigger for each and every shot. So it's not a, by definition, a fully automatic weapon. But they don't care because Trump set the precedent to say we can do that with a bump stock. So if you're going to uphold that Trump precedent, then you can do that with this device as well. And that's exactly what they're doing. And it's also the precedent that Trump set by doing gun control via executive order. Executive order. Not even having to debate this in Congress, but I'll just do it by myself. Kamala Harris has already said that she's going to do it if she becomes president. First 100 days, she'll tell them, I want these things banned, and if you don't do it, I'll do it by executive order, because President Trump set that precedent. He is the Benedict Arnold in this war of the globalist against the people. He is not a nationalist. He is not loyal to the Constitution. He is not loyal to his voters. He is not loyal to any of the things that he said he stood for. He has betrayed us on every single one of them. Every single one of them.
They have to get the shot, the vaccination.
Lots of precedents. Lots of precedents. Not just that, but also the firearms. DeMonico concludes it by saying the ATF was able to reinterpret a law. It wasn't a law. It is executive order. Under the Trump administration, it enabled them to ban bump stocks through executive fiat that sets a, quote, terrifying precedent. Trump set a lot of terrifying precedents. Kamala Harris delayed her Vietnam visit because of a possible case of Havana syndrome. And, you know, when I see a Democrat mentioned in the context of Havana syndromes, I typically think of people like de Blasio or Bernie Sanders. Their Havana syndrome was, you know, to go there on their honeymoon, to hang out with Castro, that kind of Havana syndrome. Or the Che Guevara syndrome, right? But no, this is the Havana syndrome, people being exposed to electromagnetic radiation, getting sick while they pretend that there's absolutely nothing to look at with cell phone towers or 5G. And yet, at the same time that was happening, I had a couple of interesting articles about Vietnam that came up at the same time. Interestingly enough, this is from a listener in Vietnam, an American who is trapped in Vietnam, he said. Listen to what is happening there with the COVID lockdowns before we go back into the COVID news here. He said, I'm a longtime listener, American expat living in Vietnam's Mekong Delta. I came here to stay 6 months with my Vietnamese-American wife in August of 2019, but now we are stranded here. Can't get out, and now under house arrest for 2 weeks. No one is allowed outside. Armed soldiers are patrolling Saigon's streets. Not sure about my streets. I haven't been outside my house since May 11th. Let me just interject here when we talk about what is happening there. I looked up to see how many deaths they have imagined of COVID in Vietnam. And I say imagine because of the failed tests, and we'll get to that in a moment here. Yet again, more information about failed tests. But anybody that tests positive one of these failed magnified tests, if you die within 30 days, they count as a COVID case. Well, in Vietnam, first of all, as I pointed out in Australia, 25 million people And even under the most liberal definition of a COVID death, they've only had 900 deaths in a year and a half. And they've locked down Australia. Vietnam, where I'm going to read you the rest of what is happening. It's absolutely amazing. It's even more incredible in Vietnam because Vietnam has four times the number of people as Australia does, and they've got fewer deaths. They have nearly 100 million people, 98 million people in Vietnam, and they've had about 700 deaths, not close to 1,000. So your chances there per 100,000 people of dying there in Vietnam from something that's even imagined to be COVID is 0.7 deaths per 100,000. And it'd actually be less than that because we're talking about not a year, but over a year and a half. And if we look at the annual risk in America, for example, as I pointed out yesterday, for a fall or for a car accident, it varies by age. But on average, there's about 12 people a year who die from a fall or a car accident. And if I recall, the number one was poison, and poison varied quite a bit over age, as did the fall. But poison, I think, was about 20, and it was number one. 20 people per 100,000. Here, you've got a situation of a year and a half, and you've got 0.7 people per 100,000 in Vietnam. He says, people here are very brainwashed. They think everyone and everything is a virus. So I found it just best to disappear inside my home. I've attempted to leave the country many times, but it's difficult. And many Americans who did leave were shaken down or extorted at the airport. You and I are close to the same age. I see most American and Canadian men here in Vietnam are true believers in the virus, and they also love this political system. It's amazing how many Western people here cannot see what is right in front of their eyes. I refused to get tested for the magic virus 2 days ago. I better go tomorrow for my test. I know if I don't go, I will likely have an accident or worse. I tried contacting my congressional representative in Tennessee, but no reply. Oh, yeah, just like the American embassy in Kabul, right? You want to ask, you want the American government is not going to help you in any foreign country. This has been a long-standing tradition. There are a few Americans and Canadians stuck here who have a brain and who know what is coming, and they also cannot get out of the country. Flying to the USSA is very difficult. Flying to Mexico is easier. I'll attempt to get to Monterrey, Mexico, then walk across the Laredo border and then fly home to my family farm in Tennessee. If you need any info about Vietnam or anything, feel free to contact me. And he says, Vice President is arriving in Vietnam. People here are hoping that she pressures Vietnam about human rights, but I know she won't. Yeah, what she'll do is she'll pressure them to do even more of this globalist lockdown. And this is amazing. Absolutely amazing. But something else came out of Vietnam. And this is sent to me by Roy Potter. Roy Potter, you'll find him now pretty much on Odyssey. He's been kicked off of YouTube for the most part. But I think he does still tease stuff on YouTube. I met Roy at the Bundy Ranch standoff. And he sent this to me. This happened in Vietnam. And this is the Oxford study. I played for you the comments from one of the guys with Oxford University. They were, of course, the university that created what became the AstraZeneca vaccine. AstraZeneca is a corporation with financial backing from Bill Gates, and they bought and marketed that vaccine. But the vaccine was developed by Oxford University. And so in Vietnam, they did a study of their AstraZeneca vaccine. And here's what they found. An Oxford University study finds fully vaccinated healthcare workers carry 251 times the viral load compared to the unvaccinated, proving that the COVID-19 jabs make you worse. Oxford University Clinical Research Group published this paper August the 10th in The Lancet. That's the British equivalent of the American, the AMA journal, JAMA, Journal of the American Medical Association. While moderating the symptoms of infection, the jab allows vaccinated individuals to carry unusually high viral loads without becoming ill at first, potentially transforming them into pre-symptomatic super spreaders. So, isn't this interesting? First, we were told that you were going to be forced to get the vaccine because it was the unvaccinated people who were spreading this everywhere. We were the typhoid Marys. We were the super spreaders. You couldn't pass this on if you were vaccinated. Why is that? I mean, they've always said that asymptomatic people could pass this on. So why couldn't they? I mean, does it give them some kind of a Teflon coating that germs and pathogens and viruses don't attach to them? Of course not. Then they came out and they said, well, it's the same amount of viral load. But don't worry, because if you got the vaccine, you won't get as sick. So you still should get the vaccine. But that basically destroyed any logical, rational, scientific, or medical basis for vaccine mandates right there. But they press on. And now we find, with this research done by the people who developed the AstraZeneca vaccine, that not only it's first they had no way to transmit this, then they transmitted it the same as unvaccinated people. Now we find out they have 251 times more the viral load. The paper's authors demonstrated widespread vaccine failure and transmission under tightly controlled circumstances in a hospital lockdown in Ho Chi Minh City, Vietnam. The scientists studied healthcare workers who were unable to leave the hospital for 2 weeks. About 2 months after infection injection. Well, I guess we could call that. 2 months after infection with the AstraZeneca vaccine. They called it injection with the AstraZeneca vaccine. They acquired, carried, and presumably transmitted the Delta variant to their vaccinated colleagues. They've sequenced the strains to confirm that they transmitted SARS-CoV-2 to one another. But let me tell you this. There was no test. They don't say that there was a test. They said there was a test for the novel coronavirus, but they didn't say there was a test for the Delta variant. And as I pointed out yesterday, and as I'm going to keep pointing out, there is no test for that, really. There are very few approved tests. There's not very many of them out there. They're not taking the time to do a genetic sequence to see if this is a variant or not. And, of course, the whole variant thing, when you look at the smallpox stuff, you know, you have things that are more than just a variant apart, but the single smallpox weakened virus will protect you against all those different and they're not even variations, they're more than variations. There's different strains of it for animals and other things like that. There's two major ones. And you don't have to get a vaccine for each of those major strains. You don't have to get it for any of the variants. You don't even have to get it for the other poxes that are out there. Anyway, thus we have a key piece to the puzzle explaining why the quote-unquote Delta outbreak is so formidable. Fully vaccinated people are acting as powerful Typhoid Mary-style super spreaders of the infection. But I think it's even worse than that. I think that it is the vaccine that is making them sick. They're blaming it on a fantasy Delta variant. And they're using this surge, which is happening 6 months after they have put out these mass vaccinations. They're using that to lock us down again, even before we get to cold and flu season. Stay with us. We'll be right back, and we're going to talk about these toxic medicines, and I'm going to offer you a ray of hope as to how you might be able to find another job. There's something very, very important that has come out. A pool of people looking to hire and to work as unvaccinated people as part of this parallel society. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Common man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
Hear news now at APSRadioNews.com or get the APS Radio app and never miss another story.
All right, let's take a look at the toxic medicines that are being pushed left and right. As we've seen on Monday, the FDA giving its formal rubber stamping to the Pfizer vaccine. Babylon Bee, in their their spot-on satire, says, 100 million vaccine-hesitant Americans will get the shot now that a government agency said that it's okay, proving that everything is totally safe. Yeah, they quote one person, Bubba, I've always trusted the government and drug companies, so I guess I'm okay to get the vaccine now. He was previously a militant anti-vaxxer. I can't wait to get my Fauci ouchie or wear my Pfizer sticker. Thanks, FDA. And, of course, we've also had, you know, just before that happened, we had the full-throated endorsement of Trump. So, yeah, that's probably even more important. So Trump and the FDA say it's okay. So there you go. Nothing to worry about. Sources within the FDA say the vaccine went through a rigorous approval process of various government bureaucrats saying, oh, well, what the heck, we may as well approve this now, signing a very important-looking document with a government seal and some big words on it. The comments from Freethought Project, I think, were very telling. They said in the headline, FDA takes only months to approve the Pfizer jab, yet cannabis remains classified as Schedule 1 despite centuries of data. Why? Well, because it's a UN agenda. And we even had a couple of years ago, before all this vaccination stuff shut the country down, we even had a couple of Republicans saying, why is this a Schedule 1 drug? You know, we've had two-thirds of the states, either through legislature or through public referenda, have approved medical marijuana. A Schedule 1 drug has no medical usage, and it says that it is highly addictive. Neither of those things are true. But this is a UN agenda. As I pointed out many times, the schedules, the four different schedules, and the drugs that were put into those schedules, that was already prepared by the UN 10 years before Richard Nixon declared it his own, put his name on it, and signed and turned in his homework from the United Nations. Richard Nixon, like Donald Trump, was a globalist shill. No doubt about it whatsoever. The opening to China, the drug war that was prepared by the UN, the creation of the EPA that laid the foundation for all of this green alarmism and control, all that was done by Richard Nixon. Trump is just building on that foundation. There have been hundreds, if not thousands, of studies, writes Freethought Project, on the benefits of cannabis to safely treat multiple ailments and diseases spanning the course of centuries, and yet the FDA has failed to approve this drug use for anything. The FDA has approved patentable pharmaceutical synthetic compounds such as dronabinol, which is a mimic of THC that occurs naturally in the plants. The pharmaceutical patented drugs Marinol and Syndros both use dronabinol, I guess is how you pronounce it, which is nothing more than a chemical synthetic equipment, but it can be patented. And these people can pay off the FDA. So they can pay off the FDA to approve their patented synthetic imitation of a natural substance because they can't patent the actual substance. And then they can use the DEA to shut down anybody that is doing the natural substance. And I'm going to tell you right now, that's what's going to happen with meat. They're going to attack anybody that has natural meat, chicken, pork, and they are going to approve Bill Gates's synthetic imitations. Harvard and other Ivy League researchers have shown the ability of cannabis to treat chronic pain faced by millions of Americans from conditions such as multiple sclerosis and nerve pain in general, yet the FDA remains mum. They did, however, approve opioids for the treatment of pain. Judging from the nearly 100,000 people who died last year alone in the United States alone from overdoses of that FDA-approved opioid. And, of course, now Johnson & Johnson has made the shrewd move to get out of that business and get into the business where they have absolutely no legal liability, no matter what they do to people. While the government offers lottery tickets, beer, and money for people who take the jab, those same governments will kidnap, cage, or even kill you if you possess cannabis. Nothing highlights the hypocrisy, immorality, and sheer idiocy of the drug war like marijuana prohibition. Here we have a medicine, and by the way, marijuana is the basis for the vast majority of people who are locked up in the drug war. Here we have a medicine that kills cancer cells, that saves the lives of countless epileptic children, that heals broken bones, relieves pain, treats PTSD, is not dangerous, yet the state will kill you over it. As a matter of fact, it's not just treating PTSD and relieving pain, but it's treating opioid addiction that the pharmaceutical industry and the doctors who, many of them, their practice of medicine is just taking out a pharmaceutical sheet, going down it and finding the symptoms, and then following that over to which drug to prescribe for you. That's basically what most doctors are about. You cannot make obscene profits from the patent of a plant because luckily the state has not granted their mega corporations the ability to patent nature yet. But it will be. And again, I think that will be coming. This is another prediction. I'll say, you write it down. I think this is coming with the synthetic meats. You know, they're going to say, well, we're going to make chicken breasts from a feather. That's what they do. You know, they take a feather and they go down to the cellular level, the DNA level, and they start cloning it and they grow it into chicken breasts. They will patent it. And they're going to patent our food. If we're to believe that the FDA, with a dark history of corruption, which has acted like a revolving door for lobbyists and industry insiders, I just talked about that yesterday, Scott Gottlieb at FDA, Alex Azar at HHS under Trump. You want to talk about revolving doors? It's the most blatant revolving doors I've ever seen under any president. Do they have our best interests in mind? If they do, then why have they not approved a plant that never killed anyone in thousands of years of history? Why has the FDA approved and regulated cigarettes and alcohol and opioids and a slew of drugs that have killed millions of people? Yet cannabis is only approved for production by those who hold a monopoly on a synthesized version of that, a synthetic version of that. According to researchers at Yale, 1/3 of all drugs approved by the FDA had major safety issues. According to the data, out of 222 drugs that they looked at, 71 of them that were approved by the FDA between the years of 2001 and 2010 were withdrawn. Well, they required a black box warning on the side effects, or they warranted a safety announcement about newly discovered risks. It took about 4 years for each of these drugs that had been approved by the FDA to come to light. The majority of these 1/3 that had been approved that then were dangerous, either taken off or given a black box warning or so on, 1/3 of those involved psychiatric drugs, biologic drugs, and drugs that were granted accelerated approval, like these vaccines. Yeah, we just approved it. We didn't test it. The FDA acts as a gatekeeper for monopolies. If you have the resources to navigate their web or their regulatory madness, your drug will be approved and your competition stifled. Actual safety be damned. Remember that every single dangerous drug recalled by the FDA was once approved by the FDA. Now, I've talked about that several times. A friend of my family's, his wife was killed by an FDA-approved drug. It had been on the market, off the market, put back on the market because they paid the right people. That's all this is. payola. That Alzheimer's drug. Everybody on the scientific committee, no. Not a single person approved it. 10 out of 11 people said no. One abstained. They did it anyway. Three of them resigned in protest. As Ron Paul says, the fact that more people die from FDA-approved drugs than from illegal drugs prohibited by the DEA should be enough of a reason to send the FDA into the dustbin of history. And along those lines, as fentanyl is flooding into the U.S., you have the Epic Times says, why can't we make it stop? About 11 times every hour, about 250 times a day, an American dies from a drug overdose, and the most frequent culprit is fentanyl. Overdose deaths skyrocketed last year to 93,000, a 29% increase over the previous year, according to the CDC. Now, they don't say this in this article, but a lot of that has to do with the psychological issues of lockdown. And later in the program, we're going to be talking to a doctor who's going to be talking about psychological issues and what we're doing to children with masks. But the big increase in suicides, a lot of that is due to people taking more and more drugs because they're locked in, locked down. I mean, you look at how bad alcoholism, vodka was in the Soviet Union, where people were under repression. It was their only escape. So they're preparing another way for you to escape, and that is the multiverse, which is going to be VR reality. That's what Facebook, Microsoft, Wall Street, all of Silicon Valley is pushing you into this. And it will be just as destructive, self-destructive, and limiting as drugs. It won't necessarily kill you outright, but it'll take you out of the fight. It'll take you out of life. You'll just drop out. And you'll be just as dead spiritually and in every way that counts as somebody who is addicted to meth, addicted to games, addicted to a VR reality, because your reality has been shut down by these people if we let them do this to us. So where is all this fentanyl coming from? 93,000 Americans dead in 1 year, more than we lost in the entire Vietnam War. Short answer is China. But it's not just China. It's now coming through India as well. China's mailing a lot of this stuff in directly. They're mailing it into or shipping it into Mexico, then bringing it across the border. Now India is getting into this business. So, wondering what could be done to stop the ever-increasing overdose death rate caused by fentanyl? Well, the answer that is being provided by the Epic Times is absolutely wrong. What they're saying is, we need more drug war. We need more intervention. We need more law enforcement. We need more blocking of things at the border. Ask yourself why this went up in the last year by 30% during the lockdown. And ask yourself why this is happening in so many U.S. cities and towns. They even know. They say, well, that's because where demand is. The fact that China is manufacturing and shipping in fentanyl has absolutely no effect on me. None whatsoever. It's a non-issue. I'm not looking for it. I won't take it. I won't take opioids any more than I'll take their vaccine. My family knows this story because I was kind of insulted at one point, and then I thought about it. And it's like, well, no, that was actually a real blessing. I worked at Data General. Some of the engineers, they were talking about something that happened. It had been something about something with the war on drugs. And I just sat back and I said, you know, it's kind of interesting. I've gone through college and I've been in bands, you know, playing in nightclubs and parties and all this other kind of stuff. And I said, you know, I've never, ever had anybody offer me any illicit drugs. And they all started rolling on the floor laughing. So what's so funny about that? And they said, they probably thought you were a narc. The bottom line is that nobody ever issued, nobody ever even offered me anything. But I wouldn't have taken it anyway. Folks, this is a spiritual issue. If you want to stop addiction, you don't ramp up the DEA. And you've got a lot of former DEA people that I've talked to said, yeah, this is, you know, we got a hammer, and so we treat everything as if it's a nail. So we're going to treat this locking people up and busting people. And, of course, there's a lot of crime surrounding this because we've given a monopoly to some very bad people, just like we gave a monopoly on alcohol to Al Capone and other people made built up organized crime. But this has gone on much longer than that did. And so the answer is people have psychological issues, but that's really, you know, psychology is just a study of the soul from a secular standpoint. The real issue of this, and this is just a symptom of the spiritual sickness of America, and you're not going to find any solutions in law enforcement for that. Ultra-vaccinated Israel's crisis is a dire warning to America, writes the Daily Beast. I love that term, ultra-vaccinated Israel. I would say this is ultra-unorthodox. They love to talk about the ultra-orthodox Jews or whatever. This is ultra-unorthodox medicine is what is happening here. The massive surge of the surge. They've got a surge here of COVID-19 infections in Israel. One of the highest vaccination rates in the world, 80% of the citizens above the age of 12, fully inoculated. All their shots. All restrictions were lifted. Israelis went back to their crowded partying and praying and mask-free venues, writes the Daily Beast. And then the Daily Beast is surprised to see that 2 months later, Israel reported 9,831 new diagnosed cases, a hairbreadth away from the worst daily figure ever reported in the country, 10,000, during the peak of the third wave. More than 350 people have died of the disease in 3 weeks in August. Now, again, how do you count these deaths, and what is that in terms of population? They've got about 9 million people in Israel. And we were just talking about 93,000 opioid deaths in America. But, you know, that's not a crisis as much as the COVID vaccine is it? Oh, they make a lot of noise about it, but they didn't punish the companies there. Sackler, Purdue Pharmaceutical, buying their stuff from Johnson & Johnson, actually. They were given a slap on the wrist. They were able to negotiate the fines. They didn't use civil asset forfeiture against them like they do small people at airports who have cash. Oh, I think that's drug money. Give it to me. Or like they do against real drug lords, El Chapo, Sinaloa cartel. They take everything he's got before they even have a trial. Now, they didn't do that with Purdue Pharmaceutical. They didn't do it with Johnson & Johnson. As a matter of fact, Johnson & Johnson that manufactured all this stuff, they get the catbird seat in the new pharmaceutical economy of vaccines. First time they ever made a vaccine was a Johnson & Johnson shot. And, you know, they shut down the opioids and they, you know, shift over here. In early July, back to Israel, in early July, with citizens over the age of 60 almost completely vaccinated, Israeli scientists began observing a worrisome rise in infections, if not severe illness and death, among the double vaccinated. Fully vaccinated people with weakened immune systems. How did they get their immune system weakened? Oh, well, that would be the vaccine. The leaky vaccine. The vaccine that creates ADE. The vaccine that you know, weakens your immune system, makes you more susceptible to things. I think when we look at this, we're seeing a trend. And that is, after you start vaccinating people, the cases go up immediately. And they really go up 6 months later. And these people are carrying 251 times the viral load in their nasal tests that unvaccinated people are not getting. And they want to talk about it being the Delta variant. That is absolute nonsense. Again, it's just their imagination. That's the way that they're misdirecting you. They're labeling all of these effects, weakened immune system, increased viral load, all the rest of this, they're labeling it Delta variant and saying that they can't help you with the Delta variant. So you're going to need to get a booster. And then not only that, but in, you know, coming up, we're going to have some custom designed vaccines for each and every variant that we can imagine. Viruses are always varying. And in the past, when you had immunity, if you had real immunity with something, and people did get real immunity with smallpox, when you had that immunity, it didn't just give you immunity to all the different variants. It gave you immunity to all the different strains as well. Much broader. Israel will then reconfigure its green passports. Now, listen to this. Granting a green passport now only to triple vaccinated and limiting that validity to just 6 months. Do you see what's happening here? Do you see that another reason why Babylon Bee is labeled as news? Not satire. They had the satire last week saying, you know, Pfizer had a new plan, you know, just like you could sign up for Disney Plus on monthly subscription. You could sign up to Pfizer Plus. And, you know, you get some Pfizer merchandise, T-shirts and stuff like that. But you also get, you know, for a set amount per month, you get to get a vaccine booster every month. We're not that far away from that. So in Israel, they're going to solve all this by doing it again. The definition of insanity. That is to keep doing something that doesn't work, expecting different results. So they're going to require, now the green pass is your pass to life, to be able to go out and do things. So you're going to have the green passport only if you are triple vaccinated. Well, you get one. And it will only last for 6 months. So you have Paul Offit, a guy who has been pushing vaccines on kids his entire career. As a matter of fact, he's the director of the Vaccine Education Center at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. He is one of the most rabidly pro-vaccine pharmaceutical shills that you can find out there. And he's saying, we sent a terrible message by telling people that they need a booster. We've scared people. That isn't going to last. What do you think this message from Israel is telling people? You're going to have to get a third shot or not going to go anywhere, and that third shot's only going to be giving you that pass for 6 months. Paul Offit said, we just sent a message out there that people who consider themselves fully vaccinated are not fully vaccinated. That's right. If you only got two shots, that ain't nothing. Yeah. It's three shots or nothing at all. And that's the wrong message, he said, because you are protected against serious illness. No, the vaccine is serious illness. Fauci came out and said, I don't think we're going to have to be boosting people indefinitely here. Oh, I think they will be. He's touting the booster shots. He said a third one would do very, very well against the original virus and against the variants. So, you know, a third one, that's going to be it. Third time is the charm. Well, Fauci, fool me once, as they say. I bet he didn't ever fool me. He says, so we may not be there yet with a variant-specific boost. But we're preparing for it. Yeah, we're doing clinical trials with it. But let me tell you, it's not just going to be the third one. It's not just going to be the fourth one. We are going to have a whole slew of these. When you look at what they're pushing out, and they know that this is happening, we're looking at, as I said, 251 times the viral load, said the AstraZeneca vaccine developers as they did a test in Vietnam. They said, yeah, the people that we've injected multiple times, the nurses, think of that, right? The nurses are walking around with an even heavier viral load than an unvaccinated person, 251 times the viral load as a nurse. And now we're firing nurses because they don't get the vaccine? Do the governments not know this? Do the governments not pay any attention to what is happening with this research? Oh, they know. They know absolutely. And that really gives you an explanation as to why they are now, after these nurses have operated in this environment that they're telling everybody is a deadly pandemic for 1.5 years, after they worked in that deadly environment for 1.5 years without a vaccine, now they're telling those nurses, you have to get this vaccine or you're not going to work there anymore. A vaccine that's going to increase their viral load by 251 times, going to make them super spreaders working in a hospital. That's why it's very important for them. You get people sick with that stuff in a hospital, it's bonanza time. It is a financial gold mine for these people. That's why these bean counters are so intent on getting them to do this. As I've had listeners send this to me, Travis, pull up the picture there of Albert Bourla, the CEO of Pfizer, as we go into our Pfascist corporate area. Now, when you look at that guy's smirky face there, when I saw that picture. I told Karen, I said, yeah, he reminds me of this character from my childhood. Maybe you remember this. Percy Dove Tonsils, Poet Laureate, Ernie Kovacs. I was so young when this came out that when I saw him doing this with these glasses on his eyes, I thought there was something seriously wrong with his eyes, and I just fixated on it. So it made an indelible impression on me. And when I saw the Pfizer CEO, the smug face, to me it just looked like Percy Dove Tonsils, Ernie Kovacs' character. He believes that a COVID-19 vaccine variant will likely one day emerge. Though the company has a system in place to turn around a variant-specific jab within about 3 months, exactly what Fauci's talking about. He said, every time the variant appears in the world, our scientists are working to get their hands around it. He told Fox News, because Fox News runs on big pharma money. He said, they're researching to see if this variant can escape, but we have a way that we can develop a variant-specific vaccine within 95 days of identifying the variant. So there you go. There will be a spot for this, as the listener from the EU showed me. He said, here's my vaccine card, and it's got slots for 8 different vaccines. We'll even need to have, not just for every imagined, and I stress imagined, variant, everything they can imagine, everything they can label. You know, we go through the entire Greek alphabet. There you go. There it is. 8 slots. So he's got one done there, and they've got another 7 for him coming up. But, you know, it's not just every imagined variant. We now have, and this is from biorxiv.org, a summary of a paper where they are working on a vaccine for the vaccines. This is not satire. This is a conspiracy. A vaccine for the vaccine. A drug candidate for treating adverse reactions caused by not only the virus, but also vaccines. And they summarize it this way. This came out July the 13th of this year. In a recent study, we reported that certain anti-spike antibodies of COVID-19 and SARS-CoV viruses can have a pathogenic effect through binding to sick lung epithelium cells and misleading immune responses to attack self cells. We term this new pathogenic mechanism antibody-dependent auto-attack. So it's similar, I guess, maybe to the ADE effect, right? But they're saying that this also includes the vaccines, because the vaccines induce similar antibodies, including pathogenic antibodies. So we got to have a vaccine to protect you from the vaccine, because the vaccine is a disease that they're injecting you with. It's just that simple. 150,000 people hospitalized for vaccine effects. The federal health bureaucracy is encouraging businesses and local governments to mandate vaccines despite the growing list of adverse effects, writes WND. Despite their modest effectiveness and the imminent need for booster shots. Again, as I pointed out yesterday, they authorize this as safe and effective, even as they're talking about how they are already in the works to approve a third one because the first two don't work. Israel's not even going to let you go anywhere if you've only got 2 shots. You've got to have 3. So how do you approve something like that? How many doses are going to be needed? How do you approve this? Well, it may be up to 8 doses. It may be more. As WND pointed out, actually this is a letter, an op-ed piece by Dr. Singleton, a member of the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons, AAPS. In Patrick Henry's June 4th, 1788 speech, "A wrong step now, and the Republic will be lost forever." In that, he pleaded for less power to the federal government and for the preservation of states and individual rights as a condition for the ratification of the Constitution. And let me tell you right now that we are at the same type of point right now. They are openly and overtly saying that they're going to reset our society. And a wrong step right now, and liberty and freedom, and everything that has been built in Western civilization for the last 1,000 years will be lost, and it'll be hell on earth to get it back, if we ever do. Because they now have the advantage of technology as well. A wrong step now is going to have horrific implications for all of us. And that's why we have to be very careful about this. We have to understand that when we talk about the Bill of Rights and the First Amendment, that the First Amendment was destroyed several years ago during the Trump administration. He passively sat there and did nothing as they first covertly, then overtly destroyed our ability to speak in the digital public square. They did this via their government, their corporate surrogates. This is government censorship, and we now see this. They're openly calling for them to censor their political opponents or people that are saying things that they disagree with their narrative. So we know, and it's no longer a theory, that the government is conspiring to use these corporations to do their dirty work and then to hold them harmless because they're private entities. And so we saw this done with free speech while Trump was there to assuage everybody, to reassure them that this really wasn't happening, that, as Alex Jones said and continued to cover for, he says it's just 4D chess. So it happened with the First Amendment. And, of course, the First Amendment is a big part of the reason the eradication of it and the eradication of free speech in the digital public square is a big part of why they were able to roll out this carefully crafted propaganda PSYOP campaign. And now we're at the next step. And the next step also includes corporations acting as, on the behalf of the government, acting as their surrogates. And that is the corporations mandating these vaccines. So first they have the corporations acting as their surrogate to stop free speech in the digital public square. And then they have corporations acting as their surrogates to force medicate us and to establish a precedent that we have no individual liberty, that there is no such thing as individual health. It should not even be talked about. We should not even question what they're demanding they put in our body. All of this is being done by the corporate surrogates of a tyrannical government, and this is happening worldwide. Every single country is being done the same way. One wrong step now. Or, I should say this, if we just do nothing, if we don't stand up at all, if we sit on our behinds and do nothing about this. So that is what we're facing, and we're going to talk about Fauci, and we're going to talk about, I teased what we can do about these. When we come back, I'm going to talk about exemptions. I'm going to talk about mandates. I'm going to talk about how we connect with each other outside of this system that was designed to shut us down from each other, to silence us, and then to inject us with what we're not allowed to talk about. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
All right, Fauci arrogantly predicted that there would be a surge in mandates, and there has been a surge in mandates. I'm getting notified about the effects on people's lives from every corner, military and corporate. And this is from Australia. Vaccine passports in Australia. Double-dosed Australians could soon get their ticket to freedom as National Cabinet prepares to iron out the details. They said that they're looking to get 70% vaccination coverage. Well, I'm going to play a clip for you coming up where Fauci says, What's the number? You know, they're trying to press him. How many people do we need to get back? When is this ever going to end? You know, because he said, well, it's going to end in a year on NPR. And then everybody flipped out. The Biden administration flipped out. And so they got on the phone, called up Anderson Cooper, said, get him on. And so Anderson Cooper is reading him basically a prepared question. You said earlier this, well, I'm very glad that you asked that. I need to correct that as a, you know, it's on me. I made a mistake. I meant to say not fall of 2022, but spring of 2022. Is that any better? And then you had all of these CNN reporters pressing him. Well, you know, what is it? What is the end point of all of this? How does this all end? Well, that's up to you. You got to get your shots. And what percentage of us need to get the shots? Well, I don't know what that number is. We'll just have to see what that. I'm thinking it's going to be somewhere north of 90% of the people out there going to have to get their shots before I let you go. Well, they're telling the lie that they're telling people in Australia right now is only 70%. It's not going to be true. This is a global agenda. It's being pushed by the World Health Organization. They've had Fauci down there speaking in Australia many times, you know, encouraging them and making sure that everybody's on the same page. They're just rolling this out in a different way with different lies. And, of course, to say 70% of the people in Australia need to get, they have some of the lowest vaccination acceptance of any of the other countries. Probably not as low as Romania and Bulgaria, but still pretty low. Considering what exemptions would be afforded to they're going to meet on Friday, and they're going to consider what they're going to give you as a reward if you get your vaccine. Sound familiar? It's predicted that you could be able to go to cafes, bars, restaurants, stadiums, sporting events, interstate flight, you know, flying from one place in the country to another. So these are the kinds of incentives, the kinds of treats, the kind of positive operant conditioning that is part of this psychological pandemic. Psychological control techniques. And B.F. Skinner, who wrote the book, Beyond Freedom and Dignity, and that's where we are right now. We've been beyond freedom and dignity for the last 529 days, thanks to President Trump, and continuing on through this other puppet, Biden. So we're beyond freedom and dignity. Freedom and dignity was taken away. He said, well, we control humans just like we control dolphins and other animals. And it's better, instead of beating them, it's better to give them a positive treat. You know, clicker training, if you're familiar with that. And that's what this is. You got the media out there telling us, well, you do all these things and I'll give you a little bit of piece of your life back, maybe, for a little while, until I take it away again, make you take another shot. It's believed that a uniform COVID passport app will be adopted by all states and territories in Australia. No doubt. And again, the listener in the EU, wanted to write you quickly. I haven't been able to confirm this much further, but apparently this is from a new EU COVID pass app, and it shows 8 slots for the COVID vaccine doses. Bills on what you have been telling people. We've been showing that throughout the program. Now let's go to the military. I've had some people send me letters from the military. This individual, and I thought this was so good that, you know, I kept it private. There's nothing specific about it, saying, you know, where he is or anything, nothing about his name. So I put this out because I wanted people to see this on social media. And so I appreciate this from the person that wants to remain anonymous. He said, I thought I'd give you an update on the religious accommodation for vaccines in the Army. I spoke with my chaplain last week to officially initiate the religious accommodation process. He has been at a conference for the past couple of weeks where this was the main topic. He informed me that a total of about 20% of the Army's population are resisting the vaccine and fall into two categories. The first are people who simply want to wait for further study of the experimental jab. The second group are people who feel it would violate their faith. Since the FDA did the rubber stamp approval, we can assume that the group challenging it for science will be denied from the very beginning. That will leave conservatively 10% requesting a religious basis exemption. 10% of the army being forced out all at once is nothing to sneeze at. I was informed that at this conference they were told to pump the brakes on submitting the exemption packets. In other words, slow them down. So this is his chaplain tells him, yeah, I went to a conference and it was about this very thing. And so they realize that it's going to be the religious exemption, which is really going to be the only thing that the military is going to have a chance of doing it. So they said, go slow walk this. So he said, there is a strict 30-day timeline to approve or to disapprove. So they intend to blanket disapprove. If they intend to blanket disapprove, then the Army will be shooting themselves in the foot as far as readiness goes. To date, not a single exemption has been approved. I suggest, he said, that everyone stick to their guns and refuse the vaccine, even if they are disapproved. This will force their hand. Right now, they will try to slowly disapprove people and make them feel isolated with no other choice than to comply. I say we all start the process immediately and flood them with requests. They will have no choice but to approve or to lose 10 to 20% of well-trained soldiers. Replacement would take up to a year or more. I think that's a good approach. I think it's necessary to do that. I think that's a much better approach than just complying with all of this. Because we're talking about the precedent here. And when you have people like Adam Kinzinger come back and say, well, you got 3,800 different vaccines that the Army can or the military can require you to take right now. That's different from this. This is not a vaccine. This is not a vaccine. This is not giving you something that is dead or weakened to train your immune system. This is injecting something that is going to turn your body into a to manufacture a protein spike that is very harmful to your body. It's very different. So when we look at this, then the question comes, will they go ahead with this anyway? They might. They really might, because we're talking about Democrats here. You know, you used to have the term decimation. We talk about that. That comes historically from a situation where if you had a severe military defeat in the Roman Empire, the Roman army, if somebody had failed or if they'd run away, they were afraid or something like that. As an example, you would take that division that had retreated and you would pick every 10th person and you would take them out and execute them, decimated, kill 10% of the army, 10% of that unit. I think the Democrats are capable of and probably would like to see the U.S. military decimated. They don't really care about readiness. I mean, you look at this fiasco that's happening in Afghanistan. They don't care about getting Americans out or anybody else for that matter. I think that if we simply view them as incompetent, we're missing what they really are. But I think that we need to call their bluff on this. He goes on to say, I'm less than 2 years from retirement, and I've made that choice already. If I have to be the first one to be booted out, then so be it. God will open another door, and my family is supporting me on this decision. I hope the rest of us will have the same courage to do the same. If they do, then we can win this battle and potentially save lives. And let me tell you, what we're seeing in the military, and it really is shameful, the fact that they're saying, well, if these people don't get the vaccine, you got somebody that put in 20 years of time in the military, and if they manage to survive, they get a pension at a fairly young age. Yeah, maybe they're in their late 30s, early 40s. They can go on and get another job, and then later on, you know, they can they can still have their pension at the same time. That's always been a big incentive to be in the military, having free health care at the VA and all these things. And they're talking about taking those things away from people who don't get vaccinated, but they're also talking about taking away Social Security from those of us who have paid into it all of our lives and don't get vaccinated. They're floating that as a stick to use against us. They're also talking about taking away our ability to get health care. They've already denied organ transplants to people on the basis of their vaccination status on this. These people are ruthless. They will stop at nothing. Absolutely will stop at nothing. This is another letter from the military. It says, it's with a heavy heart that I report to you. A friend of mine passed away yesterday while competing in a physically rigorous competition. The cause of death was said to be a heart aneurysm. This NCO was fairly young and in phenomenal shape. I'd spoken with him about the mRNA vaccination when they first started administering them. He was a medic, so he was all about getting it. He was one of the first ones to get it, in fact. I don't know if a heart aneurysm is a possible side effect of the vaccine, but it seems to me that it should be examined. And so, anyway, says I'm withholding the name of the soldier for privacy of their family and so forth. This is from someone who's working for a private company. He says, I live in California. I work for a telecommunications company that has locations across the country. Today, they sent an email about new protocols for vaccination due to the authorization of the Pfizer injection. So as soon as it's authorized, just like Fauci predicted, you got all these big corporations say, we're going to mandate it now. He said, I knew they were going to implement this eventually as well as you did. I will not be getting the GCI, the genetic code injection, as I call it. I will not be playing along with their game of weekly testing either. They will have to fire me, and I'm okay with that. I've been looking for other employment opportunities that will not require injection or testing. So this notification that he sent me, I read this, and I want you to hear what is happening with this. They said, as of November the 1st, we expect our workforce to be fully vaccinated. And they go on to say, you know, you got to do this. But listen to this paragraph here as they're explaining this. Those who are not fully vaccinated as of November 1st will be required to take a weekly COVID-19 test and to do proof of negative results prior to working on site or in the field or engaging in any company activity with in-person contact. And yet, further down in this document, they say, as they're talking about what to expect between now and November the 1st, they say, since day one of the pandemic, many of our essential employees have been on the front line and in the field serving our customers, clients, viewers, and one another. And to keep them safe, we've taken industry-leading action by implementing very clear health and safety protocols. Additionally, over the last few months, more employees have returned to their physical work environments and have interacted more with clients and customers, and we've received very positive feedback on that experience. So I ask you, if for a year and a half they've been able to operate this way, and without the vaccines, they've been able to go back to work and have in-person contact with people, and it's working out just fine, then why is it that in 2 months you're going to be vaccinated or canned? In 2 months, you're going to be vaccinated or tested on a weekly basis as punishment? Well, of course, it's nonsense. If this was not working out, they wouldn't be bragging about how wonderful everything is in terms of people meeting with each other face-to-face, and it's been a real positive thing, and you know nobody's dying with this, obviously. And so what is the emergency? Why the demand? Why the mandate? Why the tests, even? Because they haven't been doing this for the last year and a half. And when you look at this and say, well, okay, this is really bad, and we're going to have to do this by November the 1st, so if it's really bad, why wait another 2 months? But why do it at all when it's not a problem right now? Well, we know why. These people are corporate. The corporations are surrogates for government tyranny. And the government is hell-bent, literally hell-bent, on getting everybody vaccinated for whatever reason. It doesn't matter if the people are getting more and more sick. It doesn't matter that they can't make a case that these things work at all for the people who get vaccinated. It doesn't matter that the people who get vaccinated have a viral load, saying the company that developed the vaccine, Oxford University, that developed AstraZeneca, doesn't matter that their tests show that the nurses who had it in the hospital had a viral load that was 251 times higher than unvaccinated people, even asymptomatic, so they're walking around asymptomatically spreading this disease. None of that stuff matters. You're going to get the vaccine. You're going to get it or else you're going to get canned. So I've been talking about what you can do about this, and I think this is a very, very positive development, both for Gab as well as for the rest of us. Andrew Torba, Bless his heart. And I said that in a good way. I mean, bless your heart in the South. This usually means just the opposite. It's like, with all due respect. But no, God bless him for doing this. He is setting up a job board called No Vax Mandate, where people can start to organize. And this has been the big issue. You know, we got to find a way that we can connect with teachers who don't want to get the jab. We got to find a way that we can connect with medical professionals who do not want to get the jab. And we got to find a way that we can sell our services to other people who are like-minded. We have to start creating a parallel society. This is exactly why they want to get Gab and Andrew Torba off, because of stuff like this. Because all the rest of the people are going to shut this down. You know this isn't going to be allowed on Facebook. No, it's only going to be on Gab. So he has now launched on Gab, No Vax Mandate job board. So pay attention to that. That is very important. Very, very important. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to be right back. Stay with us.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
Elvis.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Beatles.
And the sweet sounds of Motown. Find them on the Oldies channel at APSradio.com.
Dr. McDonald, from a psychiatric perspective, dealing with kids, how do you view the idea, the whole notion of the masking in school, forcing them to wear those? Have you seen negative ramifications from that? And do you think it's a good thing to force masks, or do you think it should be mass optional in K through 12 schools?
All right. And that's Governor Ron DeSantis. And I'm talking to the man who's going to give us those answers. And we're going to do it in our own format. Dr. Mark McDonald, he is a psychiatrist from LA. And he's had a lot of experience with this in terms of children and the psychological issues that masks have created for children. So I really wanted to get him on. I know that he spoke. Thank you for joining us, Dr. McDonald.
Thank you, David. Good morning.
Thank you. Good morning to you. I know that you spoke in San Antonio a few weeks ago at the Frontline Doctors, and I was recommended to get you on because it was an excellent speech that you gave. But it's very important information that you gave to Governor DeSantis there in Florida. Tell us a little bit about what you've seen in your psychiatric practice there in L.A. With children and masks.
Well, I treat children all day long, and I can tell you unequivocally, it's been a complete, total disaster. I had a child last week who came into my practice about 8 years old with his mother. They were both wearing masks. I told the mother and the child, it's okay. You can take the masks off. It's safe. The mother, to her credit, did. The boy left it on. I asked him, why aren't you taking your mask off? He looked up at me and he said, Doctor, there's Delta variants everywhere. If I take my mask off, I might die.
Wow.
And then he paused and he looked at his mother and he turned back to me And he said, and I might kill my mother.
Wow. Wow.
That encapsulates how the children are feeling and how the children, more importantly, have been psychologically harmed, shamed, and turned into, just like critical race theory does, 50% victim and 50% oppressor.
Yeah, that's true. I've said from the very beginning of this, and you've been opposing this since April of last year, you said, you predicted what was going to happen with this. I said, as this is beginning, I said, you look at the nation, and we've become an OCD nation, obsessive compulsive. But it's even worse in the children. That story that you just gave, that is just so horrific. What can be done, and done so quickly? The children are so susceptible to this. I guess he's getting this information from being at school, right?
Well, it's a combination of factors. Certainly it was driven by fear, but it wasn't just fear alone. It was also propaganda.
Mm-hmm.
Propaganda is a really important element in this. As you were saying earlier before I came on, there is a move towards total control, totalitarianism in this country right now. And the masks is really one aspect of it. You have the media, and you have government, and you have large corporations all conspiring together to provide false information,
yes,
mixed with fear, that has reprogrammed our society. So that now, even people who are not actively afraid are so conditioned to wear these masks that they don't want to take them off. I have a friend who lives in D.C. His son is a teenager. They're completely against these masks, which is a rational position. They were never wearing them, but the boy has to wear them to go to soccer practice, to go to school, etc. The other day they were shopping in the store, and my friend's son put his mask on, not because he was in the store, just because they were on their way. And wow. He said to him, why are you putting on that mask? And you know what he said? He said, Dad, I just feel more comfortable with it on.
Wow.
I just feel more comfortable. So how do you fix that? How do you fix a reprogramming that's been going on for 18 months? We're on month 19. Schools are reopening. Masks are required. Nasal pharyngeal swabs are required. In LA, blood tests without parental consent are required. And now in two public school districts in Los Angeles, Pasadena and Culver City, mandatory vaccination down to age 12 or you do not receive a public education.
Wow.
We are marching towards a complete and total takeover by the government. Masks are only one element of it, but they are a big one because they are the biggest physical symbolic evidence and display of the compliance and control that we are subjected to.
Yeah, you know, I've talked many times to Eric Peters, epautos.com, and he's been all over this aspect of it as well. And Dr. McDonald, he wrote last year, he was comparing the face masks to a security blanket, like Linus's security blanket. And that's exactly what you're describing there. People get very comfortable with that, and it's a conditioning that is being done by extending this. It's always moving the goalposts a little bit further. Well, you just do this much and, you know, in a couple of months we'll let you out and so forth. But it's all about conditioning people. And I've seen this here in this community. When we had the mask mandates that were put on by our Texas Governor Abbott here for about 9 months, we went from a situation where everybody was fine with it. People were not wearing masks and so forth about a year ago. And then after 9 months of it, you had small businesses that even if it meant that I wasn't going to be eating in their restaurants, they would demand that I wear the mask. And I called the guy out and I said, look at everybody here that's sitting down is not wearing the mask. And he says, well, you have to. You just have to. That's the rules now. You know, they embrace this even to their own detriment.
You're making a really important point. I made this point last summer at the second visit to Washington, D.C. with America's Frontline Doctors, where I evolved my talk from fear, I called it the pandemic of fear, to social control. In other words, this started with a government mandate, and there was pushback, people were uncomfortable, but they went along with it, because 15 days to flatten the curve, right?
Yeah.
But we're on day 577, something like that,
mm-hmm.
month 19, year and a half plus. At some point, about a year ago, the government didn't matter anymore, because the people were taking over. This has happened historically throughout communist and socialist and statist totalitarian nations during the entire 20th century. It happened in the Soviet Union. It happened in communist China. It's happening now in the CCP, which is that the government doesn't need to stand behind you and watch over you. Your neighbor does, your family, your boss, the store owner that you went into who said, you just have to wear this mask in the store. We don't need to go after people with police because we're doing our own policing. So even if the government dropped all the mandates, it wouldn't make any difference. because people are so conditioned to get on themselves and to get on others as if this is some sort of a moral point system, that the mask is simply not going away. So the government, the media, the corporations, they've all achieved their goal, which is complete total conditioning. The only way out of this is an active revolt, an active rebellion, an active deprogramming by the people themselves.
That's right. And we've seen how this is rolled out gradually, for example, in social media, right? You have the corporations act as government surrogates to shut down speech in the digital public square, but then it gets embraced, just like you were pointing out, by the people, and they get even more zealous to shut down anybody that they disagree with. And now we've got about half of the country saying the government should now do it directly. They don't even they'll even disperse with the intermediate government surrogates of the social media companies, and that's what we're seeing again now with this. And they constantly push out the fear side of this as well, to get people to feel like you were going to kill Granny. And then we started hearing about a month and a half ago, we heard people on the media saying that the kids who aren't vaccinated, the kids who aren't masked, people aren't vaccinated are going to kill the kids. So they went from killing Granny to killing Geraldo Rivero's grandkids. That's what we were told. It doesn't matter what the narrative is. It's always just, you know, it's fear and propaganda. I mentioned earlier about also the conditioning that they give people, kind of a positive operant conditioning. I'm sure you're familiar with B.F. Skinner. Do you see that in this, that we're beyond freedom and dignity, that they're going to hold out these little positive conditions of being able to go here, do that to people, being such an important part of this?
It's already happening. I mean, remember way, way, way back at the beginning, like in month one, month two, we were told, you know, if you all just behave, if you follow some of these rhythmic guidelines, like we heard from our soon-to-be, hopefully recalled governor of California, Gavin Newsom, and the inept acolyte mayor of Los Angeles, Eric Garcetti, do your part and just stay apart. These sort of silly catchphrases, these slogans, they were thrown out because they were leading towards a little sucker, a little candy. Like Joe Biden said, you know, if we all just do what we need to do, we might even be able to have an outdoor barbecue and invite, gosh, you know, five or six people. And everybody is supposed to rejoice. Oh, thank you so much. Thank you so much. I'm really looking forward to that barbecue after a year of sitting at home and just eating Wheaties every day. Well, this is what's going on now throughout the country. We're told if we do our part, if we follow the rules, we'll all get back to normal. We'll all be relieved. If we get that injection, then we can take our masks off. Remember that big lie?
Oh, yeah.
Well, guess what? Mandatory indoor mask mandates throughout the country in most urban areas. The state governor of Oregon just issued a outdoor, universal, down to age two mask mandate throughout the state of Oregon. You go outside without a mask and you're in a stroller, you get a fine, you get a ticket.
Wow.
She also removed all of the high school graduation requirements in order to be more progressive and nice to all the minority students. So they're now being deprived of actual requirements for graduation. So you see all of these movements, they're all aligned. Every single thing that we're hearing about, whether it's mask mandates, shots, critical race theory, graduation requirements, affirmative action, all of these movements, they all come from the same place. They come from a place of conditioning, removal of rationality, coercion, behavioral control, and then ultimately we give up our fundamental liberties and rights to the state and the corporate environment that supports it, as you said, a surrogate, and we're serfs. Exactly. You know, I want to be very clear about this because it's not just about the masks. You know, it's true. It is just a mask, but it's so much more than that, because the masks represent this larger movement of the deprivation of our liberties. And I think it's not a right or left. Well, it is a left, right? It's not a Democrat, Republican, conservative, liberal, I should say, a dichotomy. It's really about those who want to be free and left alone, and those who want to control and be controlled, period.
That's right. That's right. Very important. So, and it's important for us to say this and to tell people this. I do it all the time so that we do not get tricked into this, so that we do not begin to start living by the lie, as Alexander Solzhenitsyn said, or as George Orwell pointed out. You know, you start to accept the fact and you actually make yourself believe that 2 + 2 = 5. That's what they're after, that kind of mind control totalitarianism, to get us to embrace the lies that they're selling about all this. So it's important for us not to do that. But let me ask you, Dr. McDonald, as a psychiatrist, you treat people. You've got somebody that comes in and they're OCD. They're compulsive about germs everywhere. Or they're afraid to go into open spaces. What is that, agoraphobia or something? You know, they're afraid to do this or afraid to do that. How, is there anything that can be done for the people who have already embraced the security blankets of these face masks, assuming that we had the ability to interact with them? In other words, if you've got somebody who is a parent and their child, as you described there, comes in and they've been totally scared out of their mind, what do we start to do, assuming that we can get to them? Because most of these people, we're not going to be able to get to them because of the lock that is on information by the media. But to the people, if you got a family member that's like that or something, or a friend, what is it that we can start doing, especially with a child?
I had a supervisor, David, years ago, who was from England. He was a adult psychoanalyst. His name was Albert Mason. Brilliant, brilliant man. Incredibly compassionate, bright, great sense of humor. He said once in response to a question from an audience member at a seminar, what do you do when you have a patient who is just terribly scared, almost psychotic, and you just don't dare shatter that reality inside his own head, which of course is a fantasy, it's a delusion. How do you do that without just causing him to crumble? And I always remember what his answer was, and I thought it was so on point. He said, you offer truth with compassion. I think that's what we have to do.
That's good.
Truth with compassion. You have to start with reality. Reality first. I say that to all of my patients. I'm not going to enjoin you or with your delusion, with your psychosis. But I'm also not going to shame you. I'm also not going to attack you. Mm-hmm. I'm going to acknowledge your fear. I'm going to acknowledge your discomfort. And yet at the same time, I'm going to meet you in truth. I'm going to be honest with you. I'm going to say to you, little boy, I know how hard it is, how difficult it is, how painful it is for you to feel that you are hurting your mother and perhaps hurting yourself by not wearing that mask. But I'm going to tell you the truth. It's completely, utterly safe to take the mask off. And I acknowledge the difficulty in doing it, but I grant you the right to remove it. And I think we have to do that to people who are stuck. We cannot continue to collude with this. Well, you know, it just makes people more comfortable to wear the mask, so I'm going to do it. No.
That's right.
That is not the correct approach.
That's
do
right.
not make people more comfortable. Make them as uncomfortable as necessary, but do it with kindness. Okay. I think that's the approach. You know, Viktor Frankl wrote Man's Search for Meaning, one of the best books ever written, certainly in the 20th century. He said in that book, deceitful and dishonest individual existence is a precursor to social totalitarianism.
Wow.
Meaning if you continue to lie to people, you put them under the control of the state and the social environment and society itself. We have to stop doing that.
That's right. That's right. And the people who have lived under those systems, as I point out, you know, Alexander Solzhenitsyn or George Orwell, who knew what these systems were like, they knew that that was the battle. The battle is for truth and for reality. We have to make sure that we don't fall into that. And then we have to, as you said, you know, with care and with love, we have to try to pull out other people who are trapped into that prison, that psychological prison that has been prepared for us for the last year and a half. You've got, in your psychiatric practice, I guess, when you talked to Governor DeSantis, you said that you've seen hundreds of children in the last year come to your practice. Do you have a lot of situations where you have parents who understand what's going on because of their life experience, but they're seeing this happening to their kids, as you described at the very beginning of the interview?
It happens every day. Recently, a father brought in his little girl and said to me, I just can't seem to get her to leave the house to do sleepovers. She is scared to death of being apart from the family. She wants to wear the mask everywhere she goes. She's stuck to a screen. She's irritable, anxious, wetting her bed. She's fighting with her brother. These were all symptoms that I had never seen before in this particular child. This child was an ADHD kid.
Wow.
Inattentive. That's it. Taking some Adderall. The kid's completely collapsed after a year and a half of essentially complete social isolation. And I don't blame the parents. The parents can't find other kids for this child to play with because the other parents are afraid. They're creating these little, they call them little pods. They're basically just little isolation groups, similar to the Obama wedding party. Well, we don't wear masks, we don't get shots in our group because we're more sophisticated, we're clean, we're not like the lowly people out there. Or another example is a musician that I work with, very, very well-known, wealthy, successful musician, lives in London now, dating an actress in Los Angeles, also very well-known. He's completely aware of what's going on. She is not. And he said to me, you know, I was at her house the other day, and she's very, very pro-vaccine, pro-mask. Everybody has to stay apart. She wants to shut things down. And yet she had 20 or 30 people over at her house just running wild, jumping around in the pool, no mask. Nobody has vaccinations. He said, what's going on here? Why are you doing this? She said, well, you know, we know each other really well, and we try to play things safe, not like those other people outside of Malibu that just go running around like crazy. We keep a tight-knit circle. So there's this sort of very interesting kind of degradation and suffering going on with the regular people. But then all of the people that have the means, the fame, the money, the connections, they sort of live above this in this ethereal layer. Well, they don't actually have to follow any of these rules. They don't even believe them most of the time. Mm-hmm. It's a very a kind of neo-Marxist, disgusting, hypocritical, amoral or immoral way of living, where all of the people, the patients, for example, that I see every day, have to sit there and suffer, but then all the people that make the rules, they can just break them. And I find that to be really a huge travesty, because I tell my patients every day, we need to end this, we need to get out of this, but they tell me, well, but everyone above me is telling me that I have to follow the rules. And I find that to be a very difficult position to be put in.
Yeah, and that's the thing, as you're talking about this, extending this, and the longer this happens, the more they even pull in adults. But it happens very, very quickly with the children. Talk about, as many people have mentioned, even not just the fear of a Delta variant everywhere pervading the air, but also the shutting off the face, especially for very, very young children. So they can't see people's faces, so they can't see expressions and smiles and things like that. It's difficult enough for us as adults to hear what people are saying, but also to be able to read their emotions and their faces because of the coverings. But these young kids who have no experience with that, talk about the effect that's going to have on them over a long period of time.
Well, I can tell you where it's coming, given what we already know. Just last week, the Brown University Department of Pediatrics published a paper showing that babies that were born after January 1, 2020, suffered a drop of 20 IQ points compared to babies born before January 1 of 2020. Mm. So these kids are about 2 years old. They have actually suffered brain damage from being shut in their house on a screen with a mask on and not able to see faces for a year and a half. Wow. If that doesn't tell you what absolute catastrophe we're facing in the next generation, I don't know what would. We know that babies require input from facial expressions that they see their peers, their parents, in order to grow their brain. That's how they make neural connections. That's how they develop emotional awareness. That's how they as they do when they touch things and they smell things and they put dirt in their mouth to grow their immune system. That's how they grow their capacity to be social. And we're depriving them of that. The little babies, the ones that were born in the midst of the mask epidemic, many of them have not seen a human face for a year and a half.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
Think about that. At every developmental stage, there's an impairment. Every single stage of life up to and including early adulthood. And we've lost that. And these kids will never get that back, whether it's developing social awareness and expressions, whether it's learning how to negotiate conflict, whether it's overcoming fears to date, whether it's going to in-person interviews for school, for work, versus just doing something on Zoom. Every single stage of life requires the ability to see faces and the ability to be in person. And we have taken that away. It is a travesty.
Oh, it is awful. And you know, when we talk about the impacts on children, they're usually the first ones to show up, you know, negative side effects of some kind of environmental thing, because their metabolism, their physical metabolism is so much more rapid. But that's especially true when you're talking about this from a psychiatric standpoint. Their minds are developing at a furious pace. And so when we have faces cut off from them, at a very, very young age where they're rapidly changing and assimilating information, as you just pointed out, they're going to be damaged for their entire life with this type of thing, and yet it continues. It's continuing on. They're going to be broken socially. They're going to be scared to death to interact with people. They're going to lose IQ points. All of these things are being done to children. It's just beyond me to what we do about this. I mean, you know, as it's very difficult for us, again, because news is censored, social media is censored, and so forth. So what is your message to people that we can do something about this?
Well, David, there's obviously no end in sight to this. And as I became rapidly aware after the DeSantis interview, there is a strong contingent, small but strong and powerful organized contingent of people who at all costs want to keep it going. I received hundreds and hundreds of hate mail messages, reports of,
oh, I bet,
I'm going to send you to the medical board to take your license away, to don't send your kid to this mass murder. And I just deleted 17 one-star Google reviews this morning before I came on this call. And I'm eliminating voicemail, email. It's a disaster. But there is a way out of this. I do not believe anymore that the way out is compromise. It is not waiting and seeing. It is not medical exemptions. It is not, I'll just put the mask on or get the first shot because next month everything will go back to normal. We know that that is a lie.
That's right.
We know that we are moving towards greater and greater control. If not now, when? If you're not going to put your foot down and refuse to vaccinate your six-year-old, when are you going to put your foot down when it comes to forced infertility treatments, when it comes to putting people in temporary prisons? I mean, where does this stop? So uh-huh. My message is this. We need to start standing up and saying no right now. We need to organize. We need to risk our social positions, the school vanity of our children going off to Harvard from some tony little private school in the hills in LA. We need to risk being fired. We need to put something on the line right now. We need to stop paying off the crocodile, hoping that he's not going to eat our head tomorrow.
That's
because
right.
He will.
That's right.
He absolutely will. We need to honor that poem that was written after World War II that described the man who stood there in his house looking around saying nothing as the Nazis came to take away the Jews and then the homosexuals and then the merchants and then the minorities and then the gypsies. And then he finally looked around when they came for him and he said, help, help, they're coming to take me away. And there was no one left to help him.
That's
we
right.
have to keep that in mind. We have to risk something now. Because if we don't risk something, everything will be taken from us. And I am not an activist. I am not a public speaker, at least I wasn't till last year. But I'm adamant and impassioned about this subject because I have seen it happen in the past. I have friends from communist countries who have escaped tyranny to come to the United States, and they are saying to me, I have seen this all before, and it is happening again. Do not, please do not allow this to be taken away from you. It was taken away from me.
That's right. Yeah. Rod Dreher wrote a book, again, taking the title of the last essay that Alexander Solzhenitsyn wrote before he was sent out of the Soviet Union, Live Not by Lies. He wrote a full book about that. And Dr. McDonald, he was saying he did it because he had so many of his friends who were children of people who had escaped authoritarian regimes, totalitarian regimes, telling him it's happening here. And he said, I'm seeing people who are looking around when they say things that they know they're going to be punished for. So I really do appreciate, and you're an example to stand up with this and the price that we all know we're going to pay. And we're going to pay this at one level or the other, each and every one of this. We're going to have things that are going to be shut down to us because we take this stand. It could be our children's education. It could be travel. It could be our jobs. It could be our careers that we've worked on our entire life. But you're not going to have that if you don't stand up. It's only going to get worse. As you said, you can't keep feeding limbs to the crocodile. They'll never be satisfied. They'll always want more. And if we've learned anything in this last year, we should have learned that. That is exactly what has
to happen. Absolutely.
We have to start standing up to this. And I was glad to see, I don't know if you've seen this yet, just happened, Andrew Torba at Gab is posting up. On his site, he's going to post up a job market there for people who are looking for work, people who are looking for employees who are not going to participate in this totalitarian society that is being set up, who are going to opt out. I think we're going to have a separate parallel society. There's a lot of people who want medical professionals and teachers and other jobs that people are being fired from for their principals. This is an opportunity. We should see this as an opportunity to make a better parallel society, in my opinion. What do you think?
I completely support that. I just said last night at the Orange County School Board meeting, we are divided into two separate societies. The rational that want to be left alone, who are largely fearless, some of whom have courage, and the irrational, who are largely fearful, want to control and be controlled. And they are completely and utterly lacking in courage. And for that reason, those on the rational side, whatever your politics, whatever your religion, whatever your personal beliefs about how you should live your life, you need to organize and confirm and build the separate society, because we're already in that schism. We need to have separate media. We already have some of that. We have Telegram, we have Signal, we have these encrypted groups that we can go onto. We're not going to be monitored by the NSA.
Yes.
We have Substack for media. We have Rumble for video. All of these anti-YouTube, anti-Facebook, pro-freedom sites, pro-liberty, pro-free expression, everyone, no censorship, is already in existence. We need to support them. We need to use them to organize. Get a walkout going by inviting the 20 people that are on your side in your workplace onto Telegram. Set up a group, an anti-vaccine mandate group, and tell them, we're going to walk out. We're all going to walk out at the same time. Organize, just like the left has always done. Organize.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We're going to need a new banking system. We're going to need a new medical care system. When you want to get a doctor, your doctor says, oh, I believe masks and shots are great. Go away. Leave.
That's
find
right.
another doctor.
Absolutely.
Get a therapist who sees people in person. Refuse to go to a hospital that will not allow you in to see your dying relative without a vaccine, like UCLA, like Cedars-Sinai, like St. John's Hospital, like Kaiser. Find a private practice doctor, a small clinic. Support people that support your views and values. This is critical, because if we just keep conceding and conceding and conceding, we're going to be wiped out.
That's
so
right.
Yes, two societies, separate societies, but one can be moral and just and free, while the other one hopefully will continue to wither away. If we don't do that, we're just going to be subsumed by like the Star Trek Borg.
That's right. Yeah, you cannot appease these people, and whatever corporation is demanding these things of you now, they're going to continue to add those demands. And as you point out, if you're going to a doctor that's going to demand this, I've walked away from situations like that, and I've said, look, that's not the kind of doctor I want to go to anyway. My wife has done the same thing. If you're going to be that OCD about this stuff, that fearful, that uninformed, I don't want you as my doctor. I want to find somebody who understands what's really going on, who's grounded in reality, who is actually using science and skepticism and critical thinking to take a look at what these people are doing. That's what we want. We can build a better society. We can have better education system than they have. We can have homeschooling. We can have cooperatives. We can think outside this box that they put us into. And I think that is the most important aspect of this. But thank you for what you have done, Dr. McDonald, and for the price that you have paid. There's going to be a price for all of us, but we're willing to pay that price, and we can build a better society for ourselves and for other people if we're willing to pay that price. So thank you for speaking out. Thank you for those examples that you've shown. It truly is horrifying what is being done, especially to the youngest among us, and so thank you for speaking out with that. Dr. Mark McDonald, do you have any website that you'd like to give people, or do you're no longer anonymous anymore, so people are all over the place.
I'm not anonymous. Yeah. I can't hide. Yes, I post frequently important and verified, honest, truthful articles about the topics we discussed on my open professional Facebook page, which is very easy to find. It's markmcdonaldmd.com. And you can go to my website, which is also markmcdonaldmd.com, and find links to that same Facebook page, as well as my Twitter account, which is mmcdonaldmd, where I also post more interesting and catchy alerts of things that are going on that are less in-depth. I'm also writing a book, which I expect to be coming out in the next month or two under Post Hill Press Bombardier imprint from New York. Which will be about the fear pandemic and the hysterical response to it and the movement towards state control.
When you get that done, come back on the show and we'll plug it.
I would love to.
Yeah.
I'd be happy to. And I believe me, I am not making any money off of any of this. I am spending my own personal time outside of my practice, which is where I do earn my income, because I care so much about our country, about truth, and about freedom.
This is
really a bigger battle than I am. I am just one little foot soldier in the larger battle. And I am doing it because I want to live in the country that I was born into. And
yes.
It's I want everyone to do that. So yes. that's why I'm doing it.
Very important. Yeah, we have to know what we have to go back to what we've lost. And again, listen to the people who have lived under this system, and they know better. We do not want to go there. Thank you so much for what you're doing, Dr. Mark McDonald. We're going to be right back, folks. Stay with us.
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via or donate via Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.
Hear news now at APSradionews.com or get the APS Radio app and never miss another story.
All right, doctors announced they will no longer treat car accident victims who didn't wear their seatbelt. This is from the Babylon Bee, and it is point on. How many times have we heard people say, well, we mandate your seatbelt, so we're going to mandate that you get a vaccine? Well, you know, the mandate of the seatbelt is to protect people who don't want to protect themselves, which, again, I've never agreed that that was any business of the government, whether I wore a seatbelt or not. And I've told the story that I did wear seatbelts before they mandated them, and then for 3 years I refused to wear a seatbelt just in defiance of them coming into my space and demanding that I wear one. I understood the safety risk of it, but, you know, I understood there's a much bigger risk of tyranny. And I'm not willing to trade my liberty for safety. And I will put myself at risk to defend liberty, which is why I did that. But here is how they put that. They said, listen, said a doctor, a local surgeon, my job isn't to have compassion and heal everybody who gets wheeled in here. My job is to make sure these people are living the way that I want them to, and then to decide who lives or dies based on that. This world has too many people in it anyway. Come to think about it, why did I become a doctor? Oh, yeah, money. Goes on this Dr. Killam, as they refer to him in Babylon Bee. Sex workers, drug addicts, bungee jumpers, who says they even deserve to live anyway, said Dr. Killam. I'm only a doctor, for goodness sakes. And then he got in his new BMW, put three masks on, and drove off. Well, let's talk about a very well-paid doctor. The most highly paid doctor in the federal government. And that would be none other than this expert that we all live on every word that he has to say.
Fighting COVID under rules established by health experts. One would have to dismiss the views of highly educated and experienced scientists, people like Dr. Anthony Fauci or Dr.
Yeah, you would have to dismiss his views as you hear the gavel come down. Stop that. Do not laugh at the emperor, even though he has no clothes. We have, at Rice University, they decided they would start testing everybody. According to an August 22nd letter to the campus community for the VP for administration, they said they noticed some anomalies in the initial round of testing. And so they decided that they would test people again. And so after they did that, they said on August the 13th, they had used three different test providers, and about 4,500 tests were conducted over a nine-day period with 81 positive results, a sky-high positivity rate of 2%, which prompted the delay of in-person instruction. Were they even sick? Of course not. Did they die? No, of course not. 2% of the people have got a condition. I mean, you know, think about how many other things we could test people for, that you could get more than 2%, and we could hobble along with our lives instead of shutting our life down forever. Anyway, so they had 2%. That's pretty high. What's going on? So for rice, a 2% rate would be significantly higher than our historical positivity rate of 0.24%. So it's 10 times what they'd seen before over the last year when we ran about 150,000 tests. And so this was only about 4,500 tests. Rice University's testing everybody. Not for everything, just this one imaginary pandemic. After 90% of the tests, after the positive test results came from just one provider, and most of the cases involved people reporting no symptoms, officials got suspicious. Boy, you can't pull anything over on these guys. I mean, they're sharp, aren't they? An investigation revealed the provider had changed its protocol to determine test results without the university's knowledge. And, of course, if they tell you that you're positive, they will not tell you if you have a Delta variant. Remember I pointed that out yesterday. And that's where, in that article, where they were saying, you know, people want to know if they had the Delta variant. Again, it's good for social media credits, right? I have the Delta. Oh, we're so sorry. Fighting it now, you know. It isn't that I got these vaccines and they're making me deathly sick now. That would not be any, you're not getting any social media credit for that. But if you tell people you got the Delta, oh, yeah, you get a lot of social credit scores for that. So they wanted to know, you know, do I have the Delta? We can't tell you. It's a national security secret here. They don't even know because they're not testing. And that's the gist of the article. It said, well, you know, one of the reasons we can't tell you is because we don't have the tests and we're not doing the tests and on and on. That's why I say deja flu, what they did all along, the same MO. So when you look at this and you look at the fact that they've already announced that they're going to get rid of the PCR tests that they've been misusing and abusing for a year and a half, they're going to do that in December. They're going to have then a test that can distinguish between the flu and between the novel coronavirus. So let me ask you this again. If you don't have a test that can distinguish between the novel coronavirus and the flu and the common cold and an RSV infection, then how do you know it's a Delta? Well, of course you don't. Because that's a lot more detail. That's a genetic sequence event there. The tests aren't there for them to do that. There's only a couple of those tests. Nobody has them. So this whole thing is a pandemic fantasy. Maybe we should spell fantasy with a P in front of it as well. You know, we got Pfizer. We got Pfizer. We got the big pharmaceutical companies and the fascism with a P. So I guess we could have fantasy with a P as well. PF everywhere. I was just talking to Dr. Mark McDonald, and of course he gave the information, a presentation at America's Frontline Doctors in San Antonio. We have Dr. Simone Gold, who is one of the people who is now being persecuted. And I say persecuted, not prosecuted, persecuted. Because she went to the January the 6th rally, she pointed out when she gave an interview to Dinesh D'Souza, another guy who's been persecuted, she said to him, I'm not really about the politics of this stuff, but whenever there's an opportunity for me to speak to massive crowds of people or talk to like a million people, I go there. And so she went there at the tail end of this thing. You know, people had been going into the Capitol building. The police were letting people in. And videos that they don't want you to see, they were giving people fist bumps and posing for selfies and all this other kind of stuff. So she just walks in with a bullhorn, and she gives a speech that she's given several times before in front of the Supreme Court. And then she got SWAT teamed by the FBI. She got charges put on her by the FBI. She cannot fly. She's on a no-fly list, on and on. This is the world that we're going to be living in. It's going to continually get worse if we don't push back against this, as Dr. McDonald said. Now is the time. It'll be more difficult next month. It'll be more difficult the month after that. A German corona critic is now fearing for his life. Well-known German critic against these measures that have been taken about this so-called pandemic has fled Germany fearing for his life. After a raid of his house, where everything was searched, scientists Professor Stefan Hockerts can see the writing on the wall. He's an immunologist. He's a toxicologist. He's not only a critic of Germany's measures about the pandemic, but he's also he is a critic of the genetic injections, which for him represent gross bodily harm. In March of last year, the immunologist stated that corona was comparable to the flu in terms of danger. His book, Generation Mask, also caused a sensation because he emphasized the harmful effects of wearing masks on children. This is why they're focusing on our children, folks. They're focusing on them. They want to give them these injections that are giving some children heart attacks. They can't deny it with the kids. They can deny it with older people. They can say it was something else. They can't deny it with the kids, but they won't stop it. And they're going to continue to push this to kids younger and younger, the masks on kids younger and younger, and never let up. It is relentless. And we have to be relentless in standing up against this. We had one of the things that happened yesterday was we had Fauci going on NPR and talking about how this is going to last until maybe fall of 2022. And the Biden administration freaked out about that because you're not supposed to tell the sheep this is going to go for another year. You know, this is originally a year and a half ago. It was going to be for 2 weeks. So you can't tell them that. And so he quickly arranged to get on to CNN with Anderson Cooper. Here's how he tried to backpedal this.
You said to NPR today, you said if the majority of Americans get vaccinated, quote, we could start to really get some good control over this as we get back into the fall of 2022, a year from now. Is that the best case scenario? And what does control look like?
No. Anderson, I have to apologize. When I listened to the tape, I meant to say the spring of 2022, so I did misspeak.
Is that any better?
In the conversation with Mary Louise Kelly, she was saying, when do I think we're going to start to get some control? I said, if we can get through this winter and get really the majority, overwhelming majority of the 90 million people who have not been vaccinated, I hope we could start to get some good control in the spring of 2022. I didn't mean the fall. I misspoke. My bad.
Yeah. Not another year of imprisonment. We'll just keep you for another 6 months. How about that? Is that better, right? I mean, is this deliberate or what? Are you happy with that? Are you happy with this nonsense for another 6 months? And, of course, the next question that he asked him there, he kept saying control, control, control. It is about control. It's not about control of a pandemic. It's about control of the population. As I've said, it's population control, psychological control, control of your movements, control of your activities. I think it's also population control in terms of depopulation, in terms of affecting people's health as well as their fertility. But here's what he has to say about control, because Cooper presses him on the second part of that.
What does control, what does that mean, or what does that look like to you?
Well, to me, that means that you have either the overwhelming majority of the population vaccinated, those who have been infected will have, and have cleared the virus, will have a degree of protection, and we are recommending that those people also get vaccinated, because the degree of protection that you could induce in someone who's been infected, who has then recovered, and then vaccinated, is an enormous increase in the degree of protection. If we could do that with the people who have been infected, get them revaccinated, the people who are unvaccinated now, that 90 million people, get them vaccinated, I think we can get a degree of overall blanket protection of the community that as we get into the early part of 2022, getting through the winter, which could be complicated by influenza, by respiratory syncytial virus, that as we get into the spring, we could start getting back to a degree of normality, namely reassuming the things that we were hoping we could do, restaurants, theaters, that kind of thing. But again...
Yeah, as I've said all along, I said it last year. I said, if we don't stop this thing in the summer, they're going to escalate it again in the winter. And they did. And then I said, and they're going to have vaccine mandates coming up to everybody by the fall. And the reason I said that was because they have the kids headed back to school. They already know that just like the military, they've been able to get away with mandating vaccines to kids as a condition of school, remember?
They have to get the shot. The
yeah, that was just about measles.
So important. This is really going around now. They have to get their shot.
No, that was about measles. He grew up in a society where measles were not a big deal. You didn't have to have a vaccine to get measles. Nobody was afraid they were going to die from measles. Occasionally somebody would, just like, you know, people can fall and die. Even young people can fall and die, but it's very rare. We don't have to walk around in frozen fear about the possibility of that happening because it is such a low risk. I mean, if we're going to be afraid of everything, we're not even going to drive. Oh, by the way, that is the agenda, isn't it? Zero. Vision zero. Zero deaths. Zero deaths from automobile accidents is going to work out the same way that zero COVID cases work out, in a complete lockdown of all activity. If you want to see how this is looking already, take a look at Australia. We had an illegal engagement party in Australia resulted in $220,000 in fines, even more than that, for breaching strict COVID lockdown. How in the world do they do that? Well, it was an engagement party where they had 56 people, and each one of them got $5,452 US fine, is what it worked out to. So when we look at this, or maybe that is Australia. I don't know if that's Australian or no, that would be, I don't know. It's $300,000 Australian, which is $220,000 American. It's astronomical. But of course, already in America, we've seen $20,000 fines handed out to people who didn't wear a mask on an airplane and had an attitude about it. How dare these people think they live in a free country? Don't they realize they should not talk back to these little Stasi flight attendants who are embracing this tyranny, as Dr. McDonald was talking about? So this is coming to us everywhere, this kind of attitude. And we have to resist this now. It is not going to get any better whatsoever. One of the ways that this is being resisted, and good for them, the Children's Health Defense CHD, that's RFK Jr.'s organization, they have immediately challenged this FDA approval of the Pfizer vaccine. As I pointed out yesterday, they called it premature, arbitrary, and capricious. That pretty much covers it. And so on the basis of that, they also, though, didn't just criticize this. They're actually taking legal action to challenge it. They said, with over 13,000 reported deaths from COVID shots, we're deeply concerned about the impact on health, both short and long term. We intend to challenge this approval and this licensure. We do not believe that this approval will significantly affect the trajectory of the pandemic, as we know that these shots are less than 50% effective against the variants in circulation now. And again, as I said many times, the reason that you don't rush these things is because in order to do due diligence in terms of safety, you have to have a long-term test. The tests have not been even long-term enough before we short-circuited it. And to make the argument, as Fauci has, it's not a scientific argument, it's not even a logical argument, well, we don't need to have a long-term test because we gave it to so many different people. Well, let me tell you, that's not a long-term test. That is a bigger short-term test. It's just that simple. Is that too hard for us to figure out anymore in our idiocracy that we live in? You know, if instead of giving it to 30,000 people, you give it to 30 million people, but you only look at it for 2 months, it's a big short-term test. It's not a long-term test. And you don't have safety or efficacy in a vaccine because the vaccine, you're not exposing people to the disease that the vaccine is supposed to prevent. And so you have to do it over a long period of time for efficacy as well. And now as we look at a little bit longer period of time, in only 6 months, we've seen their efficacy rate drop from, well, first they said it was 90%, and then a week later after these other people came out said, ours is 92, ours is 94%, Moderna said. So then the very next day they come out and say, 94.5%. And now we see that it's 39%. Oh, but it's not a failure, it's the variant, which doesn't exist. This is like, who's on first? Trying to argue with these people. It's like, first base. No, they don't get past first base. We have a fire captain who has had it. and he spoke out. And I had this to play, but somehow when I downloaded it, I lost the audio for it. But this is a Los Angeles Fire Department captain, Christian Granucci. And he said, and I've played the clip for you of the Hawaiian fire chief, who, as he spoke with a mask on his face, broke into tears because he said his father was a fireman. He'd been a fireman. He's an older guy, been a fireman for decades. So we risk our life for this city because we love it, and now they're going to turn me out on the street because I refuse to get a dangerous genetic injection that hasn't been tested. And so they were part of a lawsuit in Los Angeles, and so this is a viral media clip of the Los Angeles Fire Department captain saying, "I am so hopping mad right now, you have no idea, my head could pop." He says, "I know that I'm going to be punished for saying this, but we're not going to go along with this tyranny. This is tyranny. This is about freedom of choice." He called the medical and religious exemptions, he said, they're a pie in the sky. He goes, "We know that they're going to ignore this, that they've got an end run around that." He said the vaccinations will come, and then after that it'll be a booster, then another booster, then another booster. When will this end? When will this tyranny stop? Well, of course, they don't plan on it stopping. And so we're going to have to stand up, and again, we will stand together or we will hang individually. And that is the thing. We're going to hang together or hang separately. It's not the jab, it's the precedent. Again, P-R-E-C-E-D-E-N-T. And it was President Trump who did this. This is Eric Peters, EP Autos. He said, if you knew someone who chose not to exercise, who ate too much, not too good food, would you exult in the news of his having been diagnosed with diabetes or cancer? Most people would not. And yet what we've seen on social media over and over again, I've seen drudge, mainstream media, snickering and rejoicing, essentially, in the death of individuals. Most recently, the radio host in Tennessee, I think his name was Phil Valentine. Of course, they were not rejoicing in his illness, but rejoicing in his conversion to the COVID cult. Oh, yes, I wish I'd gotten the vaccine, that type of thing. And it is disgusting to see it. And that's why I don't like to do that with the people who were trolling others and mocking other people, got their vaccine, all you stupid unvaccinated people, and then they die from their vaccine. I don't like to troll that either. It's a tragedy when people die. It's a tragedy when they're deceived. As Eric Peters says, but yet some people celebrate when a person who questions the rightness of forcing people to submit to so-called vaccinations gets sick. And they practically dance on their graves if they die, which is what we've seen from Drudge and others. There are many good, sound reasons for objecting to forcing anyone to get vaccinated that have nothing to do with sickness, but rather with this business of forcing people to take medicine or to submit to medical treatment of any kind whatsoever. It sets a precedent by affirming the principle that it's okay to force people to take a medicine and submit to that. And once you establish that, you're done. And, of course, Eric understands this just as I do because we have seen how this has been done with automotive issues, right? You wear the seatbelt. Well, my seatbelt doesn't protect you. My motorcycle helmet doesn't protect you. It's not really any of your business. We see this where they're able to set up roadblocks and check everybody for identity papers that we call driver's licenses. Or to assume that you're a drunk driver and you got to prove otherwise. I mean, we even have now the Obama administration putting a lot of money into this so-called infrastructure bill to push the idea that every one of us, whether we drink even or not, would have to have a breathalyzer, the expense of a breathalyzer, put into our car and an interlock to keep it from starting if we don't have it. That's something that typically in the past has only been done for people who have been repeat offenders of drunk driving, who have an alcoholism problem. But no, everybody, including people like me who don't even drink, would have to have that. So he says, if the government can erect checkpoints on the public right away, at which point people have given no reason to suspect them of having committed any crime, they can be stopped at gunpoint, they can be required to produce papers. This is not like you got somebody like the San Francisco DA just left, let go, who is weaving all over the road, driving over the center median, going through a red light. I mean, you got probable cause to stop them. They don't have probable cause to set up a roadblock to do a breathalyzer test on me, or to interview me, or to check my papers, or to do a forced blood draw, which they do in Texas to some people. They don't have that, but we have become accustomed to allowing that to happen. And that's what he's talking about. It is the principle. And that's what we need to understand, that there is no end to this if we don't stand against it. Again, I'll just remind you again, take a look at Gab. For all of you people who are looking at situations where you're going to be forced out of your job, we've got to start reorganizing our life. It's going to be a better life when we get these people who have been lying to us, deceiving us, and ripping us off, boosting us, if you will. Get them out of our lives. We'll be better off for it. But it's going to be a period of hard work coming up, and you'll find some help there on Gab at that job market. That's it for the show today. Thank you for listening.
Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.